Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Didn't quite turn out, I don't think, the way that we, that many of us at least thought it was going to turn out on Sunday. Nevertheless, a win is a win is a win is a win, and you've got the only undefeated team in the NFL now at 9-0 with a bye week. We welcome you inside the playbook for a Tuesday. It is week number 10 in the NFL. It's the week that the Patriots get off. It probably could not come at a better time. John Rook here with you on Patriots.com radio, and there are many, many things to get into. We're going to take a little bit of time today to sort of kind of reflect on where this team stands through 9 weeks. You know, we've already done a little bit of the whole, you know, could they possibly go 16-0 thing, and that's going to be a prevalent conversation, I think, to take over the course of the next, you know, 7 or 8 weeks. So I'm not so sure that that's really where we're going to go. Although, if you have your thoughts on it, your thoughts are always welcome. Patriots, web radio at patriots.com, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, if you'd like to call. In fact, if you've never done it, this is a good week to do it leading into the bye week. 508-543-7482. Again, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We will recap a bit. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is scheduled to join us in the second hour, as he normally does on Tuesdays as well. But I want to kind of take stock on things. I want to take a look at some things almost by on a positional nature today. Take a look at certainly what's going well, but what may not be going well, because those of you who normally get a chance to tune into the program on Tuesdays realize that this is what we call Nitpick Tuesday. And so what we do is we like to pick lots of nits around here. If anything, we maybe just should follow the way that the team is going to call this Humble Pie Tuesday, simply because of all the Humble Pie T-shirts that still are prevalent in the locker room. So Humble Pie Tuesday, Nitpick Tuesday, whichever you prefer, that will be part of what we're going to go today with today's discussion. I want you to pick, yet again for me, one aspect of this whole 9-0 start. One aspect of this 9-0 start that just doesn't sit well with you. And this could be on the field, off the field. It could have to do with marketing. It could be because you think, you know, Andy Hart from PFW Progress blows. I mean, it could be anything, right? You could just be, I mean, whatever doesn't sit well with you through 9 weeks. That's what I want to talk about today. It's part of Nitpick Tuesday, Humble Pie Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm very happy to be joined today by a young man who, we mentioned a little bit of this to you last week. This week was going to be sort of a futures week here on Patriots Playbook. I am privileged to teach a class in sports radio at Emerson College. This is the alma mater of the one and only Fred Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Patriots Football Weekly and running things at Patriots.com. And Fred, of course, is very much into you know, taking care of the student from his alma mater, especially the ones that are talented. And I happen to have several talented ones who have been able to chisel some time out of their very busy college schedule. What classes are you missing today? They're going to join us here both today and on Thursday as well. But joining us in studio today is a gentleman by the name of Tom Anino. It's not Menino like the mayor of Boston, but it's close, and he'll accept all jokes, of course.
Yes, it is a little close.
I'm glad you're close. Here, Tom. Glad
but
you're
thank
here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. This is fantastic to be here. And, you know, I mean, what do you want to talk about first? Chris Hansen, punting game? You want to talk about the punting game?
We can now, do listen, that. I tried to do we that do early that. In the year, and everybody thought, you know, I think for the most part people thought, geez, if the only thing you can do is nitpick on the kicking game, then you know, it's pretty bad, you know?
Yeah.
You know, in fact, things are going pretty well. But we'll get into some of that, because there are obviously a lot of other issues today over what had transpired on Sunday in Indianapolis that people are still buzzing about. Number one has to do with the fact that allegedly the Colts were accused, at least initially, of piping sound into the stadium during the course of the game, which, of course, the NFL has now debunked. However, CBS has admitted as much now that it was their problem. And what CBS has done for the uninitiated was, and in case you hadn't heard the story, based on a couple of sources that I've read and spoken with today, a lot of times in television production, they bring in some what they call ambient sound, and they do it in order to fill gaps based on where they place their parabolic microphones on the field. To make a long story short, sometimes when the crowd is low, they bring up the crowd noise just to keep it even to where it doesn't sound distorted and where sometimes they don't have to ride the announcer's microphones. This is all terribly technical.
Well, you know,
it's just the way it is. You know a little bit about this going through, you know, radio production and all that kind of
sure.
stuff. And so the sound machine, it's basically a computer. The computer that was in control of filling in the gaps in the noise glitched. And that's why you heard what you did on television, although it was not audible, apparently, to anybody in the stadium. And unfortunately, much as I'd like to believe Lenny Clark, who was on WEEI earlier this morning and saying, I heard it! I heard it! No, I don't.
It's actually a pretty good impression.
I don't know if he really knew what he heard, because chances are he was already three sheets to the wind anyway. So,
right.
You know? But the thing is that whether, you know, I realize that this gives Patriots fans something to kind of complain about.
Yes.
Where we had Spygate earlier in the year, that people want to call this audio gate or noise gate or whatever they want to call it, that's fine. But it's not really the Colts' problem, although the Colts have long been accused of doing the very thing that initially they were accused of doing. This is not the first time this has come up. I personally tend to believe, Tom, that where there's smoke, there's always a little bit of fire. And so, and we talked about this back when Spygate came around. Are the Patriots guilty of something? Yeah, probably. Are they doing anything that somebody else doesn't do? No, probably not. Does it make it right? But there's probably something to it. And the one thing that I always stand for is take the two extremes. Take both sides of the story. The answer is always where?
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Exactly, yep. Right? So there's got to be a little, you know, some sparks here where this is concerned. Now, maybe the CBS is the guilty party, but the fact is somebody piped in some audio where it probably should not have been. Add to that the fact that the Patriots never had their coaches-to-quarterback communication during the course of the game, and this whole audio gate thing takes on a little bit different tenor. Now, again, this is something that the Patriots have long been accused of being guilty of, opposing teams not having the communications between either the sideline and the press box or between the coaches and the quarterback, you know, because that's why you see the little green dots in the back
yes.
of the players' helmets. That's because they're the ones that have the radio receivers in their helmets, in case you didn't know that. I know there's some people that probably didn't know that. So what it does here is this just kind of adds fuel to the old rivalry fire.
A little bit.
Yes, it
definitely most certainly does. But first and foremost, you know, the Colts aren't the only team that's been accused of pumping sound into their stadium. The Rams have been accused of this back when Kurt Warner was doing his thing with the Rams.
Yeah.
That was something that people complained about. And also, how many times have you been to an NHL game, an NBA game, and you see the noise meter on the Jumbotron,
mm-hmm.
and no one is yelling around you? Honestly,
next time you're at a game, watch
the noise monitor, okay? You know, loud, very loud, garden level,
sure.
you know, whatever they have at mm-hmm. Celtics games. And especially when the Celtics were lousy, you know, nobody was moving their mouths. So I think that it certainly does add some fuel to the fire. I believe it's maybe wishful thinking at this point now that the network has come out. And really, they should have and probably don't have any real bias in this issue towards the Patriots or the Colts. So them coming out and admitting that it was their problem, their fault, really kind of kills the whole story. But you're right. You know, it really does add yet another element to this interesting storyline between two teams that are forming an incredibly competitive rivalry. That was the most intense regular season game I have watched in a very long time. And you could even tell on the field, these guys, both these teams wanted this game so bad. And when
sure.
the Patriots finally locked it up, you saw everybody in the Patriots sidelines celebrating more than they usually do.
For a regular season game.
Exactly. And for a team that's been there before and has been there more than anybody else in recent memory, for them to react like that, it just shows how important this game really was to the New England team. So, I mean, yeah, this is an interesting element to add to it, though, because, you know, maybe some Patriots fans feel that the whole Spygate thing is really, you know, it's one of those things like eye for an eye kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I think it is. And maybe that's what's fueling this. But you're right. It does add another interesting element to the Patriots-Colts rivalry, which I think is just getting even better. It gets better every year.
It is. And I'm beginning to see now some signs of life in this rivalry like I saw back in the 1970s when the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Redskins were the big rivalry. ESPN.com had done a big spread over the course of last week over rivalries in the NFL and how nothing really has been the same largely since that old Cowboys-Skins rivalry when Tom Landry was coaching the Cowboys and George Allen was coaching the Redskins, and they went nuts on each other for, you know, pretty much close to 15, almost 20 years. You could make a lesser case for, you know, maybe the 49ers in being involved with the rivalry and the Cowboys again. And
then we talk about it, the East Coast bias. Yeah. Oakland and Kansas City
has always been a very good rivalry over the years. It's been a very good rivalry. But I think, you know, rivalries get magnified and the sense of rivalry is heightened when both teams are really good year in and year out. And we really, I don't think, have had anything like that in the NFL for an extended period of time since Cowboys Skins, starting at about 1970, and I'd say probably going right up until about 85, 86, somewhere in that time frame. And then, of course, the Cowboys got good again in the early 90s after they had some real down years when Tom Landry initially left. And I think the Colts, I don't know, I guess you could probably say the Colts really haven't had a real rival probably since the days in Baltimore when they were rivals with the New York Giants. I mean, they talk about the greatest game ever played. This is way before yours or my time here. But they talk about the greatest game ever played in the National Football League was 1956 NFL Championship between the Colts and the Giants. They made a movie out of it. You ever see the movie Diner?
I don't think I ever saw it,
okay,
no.
Okay, well, do yourself a favor and check that movie out on DVD. Because it's about just a group of guys that basically hang out at a diner, but they were all Colts fans. And, of course, the whole movie was basically around them being Colts fans in anticipation of this 1956 NFL championship game. So, it was, I mean, the thing is that was a rivalry back in the old days, you know, way back. And we're talking throwback days, right? I don't know that the Colts have had an equal rival since then until now.
Well,
and I think that's, to me, that's part of the great intrigue here for people who are long, for fans who are longtime fans in the NFL, because now you got something you kind of sink your teeth into a little bit. The other thing here is that anticipate the fact that these two teams are probably going to face each other again this year at some point. Whether it's the second round or the AFC Championship, there's a very good possibility that it could happen again.
Well, not if Pittsburgh has anything to say about it, because the way Pittsburgh played last night, they're going to factor into this whole
Pittsburgh
thing.
Pittsburgh is a paper tiger.
But hold on. Hey, okay. But also, you have to look at other teams in the AFC. You know, the Titans are a quiet 6-2. How that happened, I have no idea. But I want to get back to your point about the Colts and how they haven't had a real rivalry. Mm-hmm. You know, the Colts, up until 4 or 5 years into Peyton Manning's career, were a horrible franchise. I mean, with the exception of Harbaugh and the 1 year that they had that ridiculous march in the postseason, the Colts really haven't been a good franchise at all. So
longtime fans of the Patriots realize what a patsy they were
exactly.
in the AFC East when they were divisional rivals here.
Exactly, and I think that's another reason why these two teams are so linked, which is why it's almost scary how these two teams are linked and how, you know, well, Peyton Manning didn't exactly come out of nowhere, but he's the one who basically saved the franchise from where it was because, like I said, after that Harbaugh year, what future did the Colts have, mm-hmm. really? But this is just, it's one of those things where it's so tough to find rivalries in sports nowadays anyways because, okay, yeah, winning obviously is important. The city's passion for the team is obviously important, but the players are just as important. And now in today's NFL, you don't have the consistency of players getting grudges against one another individually. That could really fuel a rivalry.
Sure.
In today's NFL with free agency, so much player movement, it's almost impossible to form those type of player versus player grudges that really help make rivalries what they are. And I think you're seeing that now, that these two teams have locked up their key players on both sides of the ball, and now they're starting to play year after year after year in what every year now is the most hyped regular season game, bar none. It really is becoming the perfect rivalry. As of right now, it really is the perfect rivalry in sports when you think about it.
And you'll continue to find, I think, the schedule makers in the NFL make sure that the Patriots and the Colts meet. once a year.
They absolutely.
They absolutely will.
You have to. Yep. I mean, how many people? What 96% of the country saw that game? You know, this week, I believe.
Well, if you win your division, then you're automatically supposed to go up against the other division winners in your league, and then of course the other. You can't do anything about the out of division opponents because it's on a rotating basis. So if the Patriots and Colts remain at the top of their divisions, they will face each other every year. Even so, if they never were, I mean, of course, that obviously adds fuel to the fire. But even if they weren't, I think they'd find a way to put them on the schedule.
They should, and they have to. I mean, look at the fan interest from teams fans who honestly, it really doesn't affect their team at all. Teams, you know, fans who are from the NFC whose teams are already out of it. You know, maybe a St. Louis Rams fan, I guarantee you, they were watching that game on Sunday because that's all they heard all week long, and for good reason. And for once,
sure,
for once, the game lived up to the hype. That was the thing that was most satisfying to me, was this game actually lived up to all the hype and the pomp and circumstance we had all week
long. All right. I would ask, do you really think so? Because I know from the Patriots' perspective, I think a lot of fans here expected this game to be a wider margin than what turned out. Now, I'm not terribly surprised. I predicted 34-20. That's what I said would happen for the game. I was off by 10 points, and I was off by 10 largely because the Patriots got shelled for 146 yards in penalties, which was a franchise record, and some of the most horrid officiating that I have seen in a long time on an NFL field.
Yes.
The two, I mean, you can excuse a lot of bad calls. You can look the other way on a lot of calls and just say, you know what, breaks even out over the course of the year. There were just two absolutely horrific, horrific calls that were involved in that game, and the most horrific of which was the pass interference call on Ellis Hobbs. I thought that play may have been one of the worst calls that I have seen an NFL officiating crew make a determination on, well, certainly since the instant replay came into play, but maybe in the last 10 to 15 years. He did everything that I've been able to read, and because of my own knowledge in football that I've been able to surmise here, everything you teach a defensive back to do.
Got the position. Turned his head to the ball.
Everything. There was no extension of the arms. There was no contact initiated by him at all. I mean, it was a picture-perfect play. The other call was the offensive interference call on Randy Moss.
I thought that one was worse, personally.
Well, it was bad in particular because Moss never extended his arms and never pushed off. And Randy Moss certainly has a right to go to the ball. And if anything, you give the benefit of the doubt to the offensive player when going after a ball that is deemed basically a jump ball.
And how often do you see Randy Moss not come down with that?
Well,
you know what? One interesting point is you know, I mean, we talk a lot in sports about how players get a reputation. Moss has a reputation of being notorious for offensive pass interference, and he gets away with it a lot just by the way he plays. So I think that also factored into it. But can I throw one more call in there that wasn't even a call?
Sure.
Kevin Faulk on 3rd and 20, when Kevin Faulk got mauled going over the middle, that was absolutely horrendous. You saw Brady get in the referee's face.
Yeah, that's
and for
right.
good reason. That call, I honestly, we're watching at home, and I will never, ever be a referee for anything, but it was so obvious. The 5-yard cushion that offensive players are supposed to get off the line from the line of scrimmage was simply infringed upon, and Faulk was knocked practically on the ground.
Which, ironically, was the rule that Bill Polian fought for, because what the Patriots did to his receivers in 03. So.
Exactly, and that call, I think, was the worst non-call of the day, far and away. And granted, okay, it was obviously a check down. You know, good coverage by Indianapolis on the play. Brady checks down to look for Faulk. And, okay, they probably wouldn't have gotten the first down unless Faulk broke 3 tackles. But that's not the point. The point is the rule was broken. It should have been a penalty on the play. It should have been you could even call defensive holding on that, honestly, the way that Faulk turned. So you're right. The officiating crew was horrible. And it's bad for us to say, because, you know, I mean, we're on Patriots.com. You know, they're just, you know, especially if the Patriots lost, oh, they're just making excuses, the officials and everything. Well, if we check the history books, I think Indianapolis has done a little bit of complaining about officials, haven't they? I think they did that so much so that they had to change the rules for them.
There are many of us around here that have heard Bill Polian in this very press box. You know, banging is, you know, okay, so, I mean, it's a two-way street here.
Exactly.
It's an absolute two-way street. So it's not so much, I don't think it's so much sour grapes or whatever you want to say. I mean, fact is that the Patriots won the game. You turn on and you move on, and now the goal is to just keep winning wherever you can. Make sure you secure home field advantage and give yourself the best opportunity to do what you set out to do before the start of the season, and that is to win a Super Bowl and to get back on top. And everything else is just superfluous. Everything else is so much cannon fodder. Everything else is just dressing, window dressing to the bottom line, and that's what the guys down the hallway are most interested in. Now, a couple of other things that I want to get into. In addition to being our normal nitpick slash, humble pie Tuesday, and finding one aspect of this 9-0 start that just does not sit well with you, and it could be anything. It could be a player's attitude. It could be, you're still embarrassed by Spygate. It could be, whatever it is. Maybe you're upset with the punter on the team. I don't know. Maybe you're upset with Chris Hansen who knows. Whatever aspect of this 9-0 start to this football team you have that you are not settled with, that's what I want you to email us about today, webradio@patriots.com. Okay, good bye week topic here. And so we'll nitpick and we'll humble pie and we'll do this and we'll do that. The other thing is I want to know, when a big game is on, I mean, when a serious game is on and you know you got to watch it, whether it's the Pats or if you're into the Sunday night game or the Monday night game or whatever, do you like watching it by yourself or do you watch it with other people?
This is such a tough argument. This really is a tough argument.
Well, that's why I ask it, because I'm one of those that, I'm using this as a case in point. I'm going to tell my story here and then I'll let you tell yours.
That's fine. Go ahead.
But here's the thing. Sunday, I had a charitable function to attend to.
Okay.
And it happened to be right during the middle of the game. And it was something that I had already committed to. I knew that the Patriots-Colts game was on this day, but we turned it into a football function. It was basically a tailgate party at an indoor facility in downtown Providence to raise money for charity. We had members of the Patriots alumni there and all kinds of things. It was great. We had the CES boxing ring card girls were there. Woohoo! It was awesome. So it was a
great
day.
Great party.
It was an awesome party. Great day.
Good.
Here's the thing, though. I was obviously involved with a lot of the charitable stuff because that's part of what I do for a living, and I really didn't have as much time to pay attention to the game as I wanted to, not only because I had duties to take care of, which I was obligated to do, but I kept having people come up and, what do you think about this, or what about that, or they had to come up and ask me questions, or what did you think of that play, and I really didn't have a chance to let anything sit in and soak. So I am one of those that when it comes down to a big game, for instance, Super Bowl parties, don't like them.
Oof, yeah.
I don't like them.
Yep.
I have to sit at home in front of my widescreen, okay? And if my son or my wife want to come in to the room and watch the game, they cannot speak. If you speak, you will be ejected.
Ejected?
Ejected from the premises.
You're ejecting your own family from the living room?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
I am one of those that when a big game is on, I need to watch the game. Never mind the fact that it's my job to talk about that game for an entire week after the game is played, which it is.
It is.
But I can't pick up the little things, and I like to look for the little things in games. The penalties that we were talking about, and the play on Falk that you were talking about, Tom. I sit there, and sometimes I keep a notepad, about, oh, this would be good to talk about, or this is a good thing, or what about, and that way I have a little notepad that I can kind of refer back to in case I miss anything, or in my warped brain, I kind of forget stuff. I suffer from CRS. You know what CRS is?
I don't.
Can't remember bleep.
Oh, can't remember bleep. Well, that's CRB. Okay. That's a little different.
Oh, okay, well.
I'm a little different. I would have got that if you said that.
But my bleep starts with the letter S,
okay,
and we'll leave it at that.
I realize, honey, iced tea?
Yeah, I realize this is the internet, but I still try to keep it somewhat
that's
humble.
That's good. I'm glad.
So
Humble Pie Tuesday.
Yes, Humble Pie Tuesday.
There you
very
go.
Good. See, you pick up on that theme very, very quickly.
Humble Pie.
I'm one of those guys that has to sit there. I have to, in misery, in my own little pile of misery, sit there and watch the game. I really don't like being out in public watching games. Now, how do you go for?
Well, this is a tough topic because obviously parties are fun. You get to a party early. Now, see, perfect example is actually this past Sunday, Patriots play the Colts, and before the game, a lot of other sports going on. You had the Packers and the Chiefs on as well, pretty good game.
Right.
San Diego, Minnesota, Adrian Peterson putting on a show, just a great. And then of course the Celtics were on as well for us local sports fans. Tons of stuff going on. So. Up until 4 o'clock, that party's pretty good. I'm enjoying it. you know, it's you know, the Celtics game isn't that big. You don't pay that much attention. Green Bay, you know, Kansas City, okay, it's a football game. I'll watch it. But you're absolutely right, because when the game starts, I find that as the game goes on, I become less and less social. You know, a lot of people say they don't like watching games with me, because they'll say something to me like, oh, did you see that? And I just won't answer them, because I'm just too busy trying to listen to the broadcast. It's tough. I've never ejected anyone, though. I've never done that. I can safely say I've never ejected anyone.
Wait until you get
anyone.
A little bit older, kid. Then you'll eject a lot of people. By the way, I want you to look over your shoulder. Look at that guy up there, okay?
Yes.
I got one word that comes to mind.
What do you got?
Salad. That's Mark Mangino, who, of course, is the Kansas football coach. And obviously, they're having an unbelievable year.
My favorite was, hey, mix in a salad.
Mix in a salad.
Whatever,
right.
Whatever he's eating, let him keep eating it. Look how good they're playing.
It looks like he's eating half of his offensive line. That is a huge person.
Hey, if whatever he's eating is making them play like they're playing, let him go. Let him go.
How'd you like them hanging?
Have seconds.
How'd you like them hanging 76 on Nebraska this Saturday?
You know, for a guy who, you know, a kid like me grew up in Boston, don't have that many college football ties, but 76 points, that's just tough for anybody to take.
Yeah, man, Gino, have a salad. Fella, Lord.
Have some humble pie.
Man genius.
A little too much for him?
I think that may be just a little bit too rich for his blood right now.
Oh, no, hey.
That guy is a human heart attack
let
waiting
him do
to happen
what he wants.
Right now.
Let him do what he wants. His team's undefeated.
Looks like
the next
step he takes, or the next breath he takes, he's out. That's what it looks like.
They better cut this press conference short.
So
I think they might have a point there.
All right. To the phones at 508-543-7482. Craig is in South Carolina. Hey, Craig, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. Hey, John, how you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Say hello to Tom.
Hey, welcome to the show, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's good to be
rally.
Here.
Rolling rally. What's on your mind, bud?
Right. Well, it's Nitpick Tuesday, so here we go.
Okay, go.
Three points.
All right, go.
First off, the NFL can't make up their mind. If you look at the game book, the NFL game book, it is not recognizing Seymour's block of the Colts' 50-yard field goal attempt. But if you go to the play-by-play portion of the playbook, it clearly says that the field goal was deflected by Richard Seymour. So somebody needs to drop a dime and straighten the NFL out.
I actually heard something about that. I didn't see it at all in the broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because there were too many people talking to me, you know, at the party.
That might be
why
I missed already.
It. That might be why I missed it. Right. No. But I actually did hear that it might have been blocked. And I actually want to get a second look at the play. I haven't been able to look at it. But you're right. I mean, if that happened and you see it, the NFL should correct it, absolutely.
Well, let me suggest to you, Craig, that would be something then for the Patriots to approach the NFL on, whether it's Stacey, you know, James, you know, or somebody in PR, which would have to come from them. But if it's a big enough deal, then it would be up to the team to go to the NFL and say, well, this is how the official play-by-play reads, so we'd like for you to acknowledge that.
Well, I'll tell you what, on behalf of Patriots fans everywhere, I'm going to ask that you use your many connections to push some buttons and see what you can get done.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's contradictory. I mean, the game book says on the statistical aspect of it, 0-for-0 under field goals blocked. But yet in their own game book under play-by-play, it's saying that he blocked it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think the guy ought to get recognized. He kept 3 points off the board.
What happened there?
I understand it's Nitpick Tuesday, but, I mean, come on.
He had a couple of other points, and you already blew him up.
Sounded like a nice guy.
Craig is
first-time listener, I take it?
Craig is a regular, but we appreciate Craig's input. And I give Craig a lot of credit because he keeps coming back, even though he knows Gary blows him up.
it's almost like a tradition. Is that how?
Basically, yes. It's just not a Nitpick Tuesday unless Craig gets blown up.
All right.
Okay, so that's basically
there you go. Check. Right,
well, Craig, you know, just to answer your question, I'll follow up on it. We'll see what happens. But you're right. It is an inconsistency. It is a discrepancy. You can't have one say one thing and the other say the other. They should go hand in hand. So obviously that's an issue, though, for the Patriots, I think, to instigate.
I mean, it is Nitpick Tuesday.
He's Humble Pie Tuesday.
That is Humble Pie Tuesday.
Humble Pie
as well.
Tuesday. Nitpick Tuesday.
It's got many names, I actually did read about that and it kind of took me, you know, off guard a little bit. I didn't. It looked like that Terry just shanked it. That's what it looked like from my angle.
Honestly, in normal speed, that's what I thought. I thought he just hit it left, and that was the end of it. I didn't realize that maybe Seymour had gotten a little finger on it or hand on it or whatever. Now, it may very well be, after looking at the videotape, and again, I haven't looked at it slowed down, that they determined that it wasn't blocked and that it just wasn't changed in the play-by-play.
Could have happened.
That's also conceivable. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is that the only thing we're nitpicking about today?
I was going to say.
You had a couple of other things, didn't you?
This is my big thing.
Okay.
For Jarvis Green, mm-hmm. okay, now Brady is going to get a lot of pub, obviously, the way he's playing. He should. Moss? Yes, of course, he should. The defense as a whole? Absolutely. Seymour coming back? Yes. Jarvis Green had 5 tackles in this game, but 2 of those tackles were 2 of the biggest tackles of the season, period. When he dropped the die in the backfield twice, and then the 3rd play, knocking the ball out of Peyton's hands and tipping that ball essentially into Roosevelt Colvin's hands, Jarvis Green, in my opinion, is the MVP of the game. He doesn't show up in the stat sheet as much, and he shouldn't because Seymour's coming back. I believe Jarvis Green started the game, but he came out after the first series and Seymour got most of the reps, mm-hmm. which he should. He's Richard Seymour. He should be in there. I understand that. But Jarvis Green is going to get lost in the shuffle in the history books of this game because he was the guy who made it all happen. And how many times did you see a die get dropped in the backfield in that game? 3, 4
times?
Seemed
like it was about like that, right?
Yeah, something like that. Green did it twice. Okay, Jarvis Green made plays when he needed to, and that's the most amazing thing about this Patriots team. They have so many big names that do such a fantastic job. But every week, you see one or two guys step up who you really didn't think would step up. Did anybody think Jarvis Green would have a big game now that Seymour is back in the lineup? Did anybody did his name come up once in the extreme magnified coverage that this game got leading up to the week? Did anybody at all on sports radio, on message boards online mention, I think Jarvis Green's going to be an X factor? Absolutely not. And what did he do? He stepped up and made big plays when he needed to. And how grim did that look for the Patriots with 10 minutes to go? Was there anybody in the country that was being objective, that thought the Patriots were going to win that game? Anyone?
Outside of New England, probably not. But in New England, I would think very strongly that a lot of fans felt like they could still come back.
Did you think they could come back?
Sure did.
I
really thought that it would be very difficult. In fact, I remember I'm watching the game with my son, and I told him, I said, well, got a lot of work to do here. That's all I said is we got a lot of work to do here. And he's all, you know, upset, you know how kids are, you know, and wants to turn off the TV and all that kind of stuff, right? And wants to, you know, stalk away. But I just said, you know, no, don't give up just yet. Don't give up just yet. There's still a ton of time left. With, you know, it was 8:40, I think it was, when we hit that. And that's, of course, when the Patriots, right before they scored again. So, you know, I think that there were a lot of – I think there's probably a fair share of Patriots fans that felt like it could still be done. But I'm sure outside of this area, most everybody thought that the king was dead.
I'll be honest, I thought it was over. I mean, you're telling me Joe Adai averaging 4 yards a carry, he's got a buck 12 at the end of the game. The way he's running the ball, you're telling me the Patriots going to be able to stop the Colts to get the ball back in that instance? It simply wasn't. It didn't seem like it was even in the cards
certainly
on
have been
the
a
table.
Right.
And that's one thing that stunned me so much about Indianapolis. I mean, Joe, how good is Joe Adai?
That's very good.
If you rank.
Well, realize now that, you know, it's one thing to rush for 112, but his receiving yards were inflated by that 73-yard play where about 5 missed tackles came right toward the end of the first half.
No, it's true. But even still, though, the Patriots.
We wouldn't be talking about him, though, if that 73-yard catch and run had not occurred. We would have said, oh, he had a great game. He scored 112.
Really?
Not to the extent that we are now, because he became the first player in Colts history to rush for 100 and receive for 100 in the same game.
But even still, you cannot deny how good this guy really is.
Oh, he's great. He's a great player.
But if you rank the three
He was the
things,
best player on the field.
He was.
With the exception of your choice of Jarvis Green, which I think is a very good choice for an unsung hero and an MVP, he was the best player on the field, I thought, overall, start to finish on Sunday.
Okay, granted, you're right. But the Patriots' defense has been so dominant all season long. And for a guy like Adai to come in and torch them the way he did, because he really did. He essentially did. He even made, it's not like that. Well, granted, your one catch was 73 yards of his 114. He had 4 other catches. He had 4 other catches, I think, if I remember correctly, 2 of them were for first downs. And he still ran the ball with great effectiveness against the Patriots team. That's incredibly tough against the run. If you rank the 3 things you learned in this game, Joe Adai is great. Has to be somewhere. It for me, those are one of the three things I learned from this game, how good he really is and how dangerous he's going to be down the road. Did he not remind you of Marshall Faulk?
A little bit.
The way he can do it all.
That's a good comparison, actually.
And
yeah.
He's a guy that scares me for years to come for the Colts, but that's something else I learned. I mean, there was so much going on in this game. And also, I want to say this, you know, living up to the hype is what I mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
and you're right. A lot of people thought this game was going to be a blowout one way or the other. I agree with it. I let the Patriots win this in a surprising walk, personally, which they obviously did not. But it was such a great game. It was a fantastic game because it was yet another highlight on the reel for Tom Brady where he came back in the fourth quarter and stole a game that the Patriots, let's be honest, didn't have any business winning. They stole that one in Indianapolis, in my opinion, because the way they played in that first half, the way the Colts came out, the Patriots didn't come out flat, but they looked flat because mm-hmm. Indianapolis was so amped up for that game. You could tell they were ready. So this game was fascinating to me. But it proves, though, that the Patriots are human. And this, if you ever needed, it does. And you know what, though? I think this is exactly the kind of win that the Patriots needed to win. This game reminded me of 2001, the Tom Brady, Antoine Smith, you know, David Patton, New England Patriots. They eke it out at the end. They take games that they really probably shouldn't win. If you look at the stat sheet objectively, they had no business winning this game, but they still found a way to do it. Just hats off to the Patriots in that respect, but. I mean, but Jarvis Green is my story of this game. He's the guy. No one, and still, not enough people are talking about his contributions enough, and I think it shouldn't go unnoticed.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. Some good points. We're inside Patriots Playbook here on a Tuesday. I'm John Rook. Tom Anino is our guest in studio today, and we hope that you will take the time to send us your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com.
No, 100 years, we haven't won a first series, right? 1918. 100 years, but close.
See, there's the first Tom Menino reference to the mayor of Boston.
I think I heard a Rolling Rally one, too. I think I heard a Rolling
Rally. Rolling Rally? Do we have a Rolling Rally?
The generations of New Englanders.
That sounds just like me.
How much crap do you actually take for that? Having a name that sounds similar to the mayor's.
Well, let's see. What year was he elected? 96? So, yeah, it's been a while.
Been a
long time. Yeah, but you know what?
Half your life, your kid.
I've just learned to embrace it. And, you know, the luckiest person is my father because I'm a junior.
Okay.
And my dad is Tom Sr. And they all just gave it to me because I was the kid.
Where do your folks live?
Braintree. Okay. it's something I've learned to deal with, and a lot of jobs, places I work, you know, they get on the loudspeaker and go, "Mayor to the front, mayor to the front." They just call me mayor.
Just call you mayor.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, it's better than being called other things. I've been called a lot worse than mayor in my lifetime. A lot worse.
There you go. All right, let's see if we can get some emails in here. And again, the topic of the day here, if you haven't had a chance to send your email in yet, you can still do so. Webradio@patriots.com. You know, we read them all. Sometimes we can't get them all on, but we do read them all here. Has to do with today being Humble Pie Tuesday. Formerly known as Nitpick Tuesday.
It's changed.
Right? We have to change.
We're revamping.
Just because it's humble pie here. But I want you to come up with some aspect of this 9-0 start. Since we're in the bye week now, I want you to look over the last 9 weeks. I want you to come up with some aspect of this 9-0 start, whether it's on the field or off the field. Tell me something that just doesn't sit right.
Got to be something.
Something that just doesn't sit well with you.
Got to be something.
Something. I mean, anything.
For me personally, me?
Yeah.
I still am not convinced that this team can run the ball, the Patriots. I'm not convinced of it.
Why?
Maybe it's because, and this is nitpicking, and this is what I'm doing.
Well,
please
this
don't
is
blow
we
me
do.
Up. Don't
this
blow me up. Let me finish.
This is what we do on Tuesday.
This is what I do. Just please don't blow me up.
Okay.
Maybe it's because the passing offense has been so ridiculous that it makes the running game look almost insignificant. But I'm still not completely convinced that the Patriots can run the ball as effectively as they've been able to do in their previous Super Bowl seasons. I'm extremely concerned about Sammy Morris on injured reserve. Extremely concerned. Because while I love Maroney and think his potential is fantastic, it's virtually limitless for Lawrence Maroney. He's injury prone. No one can argue that. There's not a person that could convince me that Lawrence Maroney is now no longer injury prone and he's invincible. Okay, losing Sammy Morris as the insurance policy is a big deal. And while Kevin Faulk has been so reliable to this team, so reliable year after year. Every time he touches the ball, John, I got to be honest, I'm afraid he's going to cough it up. Every single time. I don't know, maybe it's just because I've watched him for so many years, and but it just seems like he has one big fumble a year, like against Indianapolis last year when they were marching down the field at Gillette Stadium right here where we are right now, and he fumbled the ball. The running back situation still scares me a bit because, okay, if the Colts slowed them down, obviously – you're going to make a hard argument to say anybody could slow him down and win. But that concerns me. When you get to the playoffs, running the football is paramount. It's extremely important, especially when you get to the winter months. And that's what the Patriots did so well in their other Super Bowl years. They were able to pound the ball between the tackles. And quite honestly, I'm not convinced that they can do it to the level of effectiveness where they should be and could be. That's the one thing. If I had to pick one thing that I'm worried about, I'm not convinced that they can still run the ball effectively. I'm just not.
Would you be then a proponent, even though Bill Belichick sort of squashed this one yesterday, would you be a proponent then for re-signing Corey Dillon in a pinch just to back up?
Probably not, because he hasn't been in a game in so long. One name that really struck a chord with me, and I said, that's interesting. Kevon Barlow. Barlow is a guy who I thought had some pretty good talent when he was out in San Francisco, and then I believe he had some time in Cleveland as well. He ran the ball fairly well. I wouldn't mind seeing them bring in a guy like him, or even, you know, I mean, obviously the trading deadline has passed, but there's got to be some guys out there that have had some game
action. I said
this
out loud to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and nobody chuckled because I think that they realized that, you know, wow, that'd be unbelievable. Go get Ricky Williams.
Now, If that happens,
go get Ricky
if
Williams.
If that happens,
he wants to play.
Then that's when they smoke it.
Well, he might. But you talk about rehabbing guys, okay? We have a penchant for rehabbing guys here in New England. All right, now if you can get the Dolphins to release him, or the Dolphins to get some sort of compensation, because they don't want him in Miami anymore. Here's a guy who played for next to nothing just because he wants to play. Now I happen to know for a fact that he has been doing some of his rehab work in Boston over the last few weeks.
Really?
Yes, he has.
Well,
so it's not like he's unfamiliar with the area.
Very
foolish. That's definitely accurate.
The whole thing with this whole Ricky Williams stuff.
How about Ricky Williams in a Patriot uniform?
It would be one heck of a story.
I look very foolish.
It would be one heck of a story. it would really be amazing to see how.
Sometimes I have sweets.
Fans had some classic Ricky right there. But fans, I think fans would react, you know, fairly favorably to that.
I think people go nuts over that. Are you kidding me?
Well,
guy won a Heisman Trophy.
But wait a minute. One thing I don't understand is why do you think the Dolphins don't want him?
Because they feel like they would just be going back to the way things were when he was going through his serious troubles, you know, with his, you know, admitted use of, you know, marijuana and everything.
But, okay, you know, Ronnie Brown's done for the season. They have Jesse Chapman.
I think the Dolphins are absolute idiots for not trying to bring him back.
Why would they not want him back?
Thank you.
I think
you play a little Texas fight.
Come out and admit it.
I wasn't gonna bring it up, but I'm glad somebody did.
Why? Because I bleed orange. Cut me, and I bleed orange.
I'm glad somebody did. The comeback kids, right? The comeback kids.
That's right. That's right.
That's what they do.
Thank God we have Oklahoma State on the schedule every year.
But
that Miami doesn't re-sign him is because I'm telling you, they don't want to take a chance on going back to the way things were. They feel like they need a fresh start. I think they're idiots for not re-signing him. They should bring him back because, hey, after all, they're 0-8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can't get any worse here. But I understand.
Oh, it can. 0-9, 0-10, 0-11.
And that's the way
yes,
it's going
it
to go.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I also think that they'll probably let him just kind of lie in limbo for a while because I really don't think they want him to go to a place like New England.
How bad do they look if Ricky Williams puts on, you know,
I think you go out and you make him an offer.
And then torches him for a $130, they're going to look pretty dumb. But
go out and make him an offer of a fourth-round pick. We seem to have a good track record with offering fourth-round draft picks.
Yeah, fourth-round picks work
for guys who are supposedly, you know, ne'er-do-wells.
Fourth-round picks get you the best receiver in the league. So
exactly.
Fourth-round picks are pretty valuable now.
Fourth-round pick can get you a Heisman Trophy.
Imagine what you can get for a third. Who do you get for that? Peyton Manning?
Maybe.
But exactly. But this is Ricky Williams. It's such a gamble. But you know what? It's one of those things. Like, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be stunned. I'm right in the middle there of, you know, okay, I can't believe they did that, but it kind of makes a little bit of sense. It's one of the he's one of those names that you don't. It's pretty much like playing Russian roulette. I mean, what can you expect out of him? And what has he been doing? Has he been in the Canadian Football League? Is that what this is?
He did play a little bit last year in Canada. I know he's.
What's he doing now?
I don't think he's in game shape or anything. So I don't know whether or not his actually coming back to play this year would even be a factor. He first of all has to be reinstated officially by the NFL, which he has not yet been done. So, but I think he's kind of hoping that that's a mere formality, and then once he is, you have to figure out some way to solve his problem with the Dolphins, and, you know, what do you do? Because Dolphins technically still hold his contractual rights.
Well, but this is the thing that I would argue why I don't think he's coming here. I mean, you could talk about the marijuana use.
I didn't say he was going to
come.
Maybe.
I know.
This is something you should consider.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying if that argument were to come about right now, I would say that he did something. I mean, you brought up Randy Moss in the fourth round pick. He did something that Randy Moss has never done, which was literally quit on his team.
Mm-hmm.
He literally not quit on the team, not quit the team and finish out the string. You know, take some plays off. He literally quit on the team. And that's why the Dolphins, the real reason they don't want him back is because
he would be expected here. He would not be expected to be the man. He would be a backup, number one. Number two, in Miami, he was the man, and they expected him to be the man, and he couldn't be the man. He couldn't handle it. Ricky has, you know, some phobias going on in his own mind, and, you know, he has a hard time handling responsibility and the spotlight. He obviously handled it fairly well at Texas, I think, his last year when he was going through all that stuff. But the fact is that it manifested itself once Mike Ditka made such a big deal over him and drafting him and bringing him to New Orleans.
Trading about 25 draft picks.
Whatever
together.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, he, from what I understand, has, you know, repented. He is ready to try this again. And if you take the pressure off of him and you surround him with the right kind of guys, which this locker room purports to be, the right kind of guys. I mean, if they can pull a guy like Corey Dillon in a few years ago, and then if they can pull a guy like Randy Moss in a few years ago and get him to buy into the team aspect, why can't you do it with Ricky?
Well, if you call Moss and Dillon problem players on
their
former teams.
They were, Tom. They were.
I know. I know. But they weren't this bad. They did not walk out on the team.
Well, but see, you know, bad is a relative term, okay? I think bad is relative. There are certain degrees of bad.
Yeah, and this is the worst possible.
He quit on his whole team. I don't know. I don't know that I buy that. I think he was obviously under the influence. I think he has also some issues with depression. I think some bipolar issues. And anybody that has that or knows people that have that can understand that, you know, those are serious issues. So in that regard, as long as he has things under control, he's taking the right kind of medication for that, and he's surrounded with good, solid veteran leadership in the locker room and keep the guy in check and make sure that he doesn't get out of hand like they've got a track record of doing here. I'm just saying it adds up to that makes an interesting conversation. Now, I don't know that you could ever sufficiently come up with the right amount of compensation to pull something like that off. But it just wouldn't shock me to see that kind of discussion having already been held. And
no.
We just don't know about it.
No, you're right. But look at that locker room he was in. He had veteran leaders around him. Jason Taylor.
Lightweight.
Zach Thomas.
Lightweight.
Hey, there's still veteran presence. There was still a veteran presence there in Miami. And I'm trying to think of – there was an offensive lineman that came out and really was the one who led the charge. I'm trying to remember his name. Maybe I'll get it by the end of the show. But all I know is this. Ricky Williams did something that no other problem player has done that the Patriots have acquired, and that is literally pick up his bags – and walk out on the team for whatever reason.
Bad about that? He didn't want to play anymore. Would you rather have a negative influence in the locker room? Would you rather have a negative influence in the locker room of a guy going half-assed out on the field, or would you rather just have him pick up and leave?
Quit before the first week of training camp then. Quit in the offseason.
He didn't realize his team sucked.
Okay. Well, that right there, you just said it. His team sucked, so that's why he quit. If that's why he quit, then he is the worst
Which,
level of bad.
Which, by the way, made me very happy, but other than that.
He is the worst level of bad. He is past the line of bad if that's why he quit on the team. If it's a mental health issue, okay. But the bottom line is this. It's on his resume that he quit on the Dolphins.
Well,
quit.
You know what? I'm all for giving second chances.
Of course.
And third chances.
Yeah, how many is Ricky going to take?
And you put him in the right set of circumstances and the right situation. I'm not saying he needs to be or even should be a go-to guy for anybody. But he can certainly be a guy that can come in and get you 10 to 12 carries a game.
Okay.
And he can be a guy that can do some damage with those 10 to 12 carries.
If he doesn't decide to quit,
right.
which might happen. That could happen anytime.
But if he does, okay, certainly, number one, then he seals his fate forever, right? Number two.
I think he already has.
But that may very well be the case. That is possible. But even if he does, if he's only getting 10 or 12 carries a game max, what's that going to hurt your team? What's it going to hurt this team? Is it going to put this team any worse off than it is right now? No.
All I've said, saying negative things about Ricky Williams, I still stand by what I said at the start. If they did it, I wouldn't be stunned. I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be knocked on the floor stunned. Because you're right. Rehabbing players, taking problem players is something the Patriots now have done. And, hey, if they feel like he can contribute, that's fine. But all I'm saying is there are other guys out there that could give you at least what Ricky Williams can give you without nearly as much baggage and nearly as much, problems on his past resume.
Right.
I just don't see how that works out.
Well, I think it's just kind of fun to sort of play
with.
It is
fun. It's fun. It's fun. But
think about it a little bit, you know? I mean, why not? All right, I've got a bunch of emails here. All right, so why don't we get into some of these again?
All right.
Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. If you want to phone in, you can do so. 508-543-7482. Tom Menino, who is one of my sports radio students at Emerson College. He's a graduate student at Emerson. By the way, he's looking for work. So if you're a program director, you know, for a radio station right now and you like the way this young man sounds, by all means.
I'll send you my resume by the end of the show.
You can call me as long as I get a cut and we're all set.
That's fine.
Oh, I can't do that here, can I? Oh,
I'll take it. I'll take it. Just do it.
That's exactly right. All right, this one comes from Jeff.
All right.
And Jeff says, congrats to the Pats and a great come-from-behind victory. The thing that struck me most was how eerily similar the end of this game was to the game last January. In both cases, the Pats had the ball with just over 2 minutes to play and a crucial third down. If they convert it, then they can run out the clock. Last January, of course, they could not. But Sunday, Welker caught the out, smartly fell down inbounds to run the clock all the way to the two-minute warning, and that was all she wrote. What a difference a year makes, eh? I thought that was maybe the smartest single play of the game. Right at the end when he caught that pass and he stayed in bounds. And the referee comes running over and he's waving his arm. And I'm like, oh, that's unbelievable. What a great, smart play.
Not just the smartest play of the game. That's one of the smartest plays I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just the fact that
smart.
He knows. That's a guy who
and by
is
the way,
so
I know
locked
Andy
in.
Andy Hart mentioned last show he doesn't think that Wes Welker should get his due. But I'm ready to say that Wes Welker is more than just a bit player on this team.
He's fantastic.
He deserves the Pro Bowl right now as far as I'm concerned.
How much does he remind you of Troy Brown? Just watch him play. He's always there on third down.
A younger
down.
Troy Brown, anyway.
Right, okay. Exactly. Always there on third down. Always there on third
right.
down.
Absolutely.
Every
Very
single
reliable.
Time.
Very
and
reliable.
He's so locked in yep. on every situation. He never makes the wrong move.
He says, I know that this has been asked before, but if the Pats had won last January, do you think they still would have gone on their spree to overhaul the offense, or would they have continued to think Brady could turn any shoemaker into gold?
Well, if Randy Moss...
Good question.
It is. And I've actually heard it talked about before. If Randy Moss is available, you get Randy Moss. So I don't think if the Patriots won the Super Bowl last year, would they have not gotten Randy Moss? If Randy Moss was available the way he was, if they were holding the Lombardi Trophy, they still would have gotten him. Same thing with Welker. Stallworth, maybe. That's the one guy where I go, okay, maybe they were trying to pile it on here to make sure that they had all the weapons they needed to. But it is an interesting question because how many times have we seen teams in pro sports, also in pro football, hold on to players far too long? And the Patriots are the best team in sports, not just football, in sports,
mm-hmm.
at getting rid of players at the right time. The list can go on forever. They go from, you know, anybody from Damian Woody. You could even argue Adam Vinatieri
sure,
as well,
sure.
who now has lost some of his leg. I know Patriots fans don't want to hear that, but getting rid of Adam Vinatieri was the smart financial move.
That,
and, you know, that's 50 what they do
yarder,
best.
The 50-yarder he missed was the first one he's ever missed in the dome.
Exactly.
In the RCA.
Case
game.
In
first
point.
One ever he has missed.
And what
ever.
Was his long field goal going into that game? It was something, I don't have it in front of me, but it was something that
he
was
he didn't have a
50-yarder,
I know.
Minuscule. Yeah. I mean, the guy, he was also, when they got rid of him his last year in New England, he was 13th in the AFC in mm-hmm. kicking. Not in the NFL, in the AFC. Mm-hmm. So that was a move that they had to make. But this is what I'm talking about. They always... I don't think it really matters what the situation is. They always make the move that's right for the team, and they're always looking ahead. You know, I find it ironic that a team that has a coach that talks about so much about staying in the moment and staying focused. That's true. And the Patriots organizationally do that as well, but they always have one eye on the future as well. And that's why this team has been so ridiculously successful. So to answer your question, I really think they would have made a lot of the moves they made anyways, even if they did win the Super Bowl.
I would actually agree with that. Pat says, I think the media, especially the national media, has a vested interest in keeping this good versus evil thing going for the rest of the season. It's not that the Pats are evil, but it's a good storyline. And for ESPN, NFL Net, Fox, and so forth, it's more important than reality. And here are some examples of their inconsistency. Number one, as expected, St. Payton returned to form and made injury excuses for the loss. And in doing so, threw his teammates who replaced the starters under the bus. He used the old, I'm not making excuses, but lie line. And, of course, wasn't called on it by any of the media I heard today. On the other hand, just because Belichick didn't give a warm handshake to a guy who publicly compared him to Barry Bonds, Belichick is painted as the bad guy since he was dissing the sainted Dungy. At least my coach isn't a hypocrite and doesn't pretend to be cordial to a guy who thinks that he is a lowlife. Why should he? What a world. And number three, over the recent three losses to the Colts, the Pats have had a myriad of injuries to critical people, and not once have I ever heard a national commentator make mention of them as a reason the Colts beat the Pats. Yet the haters, like Young and Jackson on ESPN, harp on Hugo and Jackson injuries and their effect like they were the keys to the Pats' victory and bode well for the Colts should they meet up in the playoffs down the road. What BS. It's good. It's a very good email.
Where do we start with this?
It's a very, very good email. Now, we'll start with the Peyton Manning comments. You know, I'm not making excuses, but fact is that injuries should never, ever, ever be an excuse. The only excuse that I think you could ever make a legitimate claim for is if your quarterback goes down. If Manning goes down and the Colts stink because he's not in there, okay, I'd say that's probably an excuse.
Oh, my arm! It's broken!
Thank you.
Yes, Roddy Dangerfield,
absolutely. And the same thing with Brady. But I don't know that you could even make that case for any other team in the NFL other than those two teams. Those are the only two teams that I really think that those would be the only injury excuses that are viable. First of all, everybody has the same amount of guys in the roster. It is up to the people who are in player personnel to make sure that you got the right guys. Shame on you if you don't. Injuries should not be an excuse, period.
And you know
what?
I
don't care if you're St. Payton or not.
Well, this is my whole thing about Peyton Manning, and I say this to my friends all the time, and they cringe when I say it, but I have to. He reminds me so much of Dan Marino in every aspect of everything about him. How good he is,
except
how accurate
he won a Super Bowl.
Okay, yes, very true. Put 1 point for Peyton on that one. But a big point, probably the biggest of all.
But the
way they react in the field to adversity, I mean, the way you see Peyton throw his arms up in the air, the way he looks like he's crying all the time, he does have a tendency to make excuses. Now, in a game that big where he, for once, he was the guy who fumbled the ball at the end. He was the guy who really made the final mistake. Granted, he really didn't have that much of a choice, but he still made it. He was the one who fumbled the ball. So I think he felt a little more defensive than usual, not to mention the fact that the Colts painted themselves as the big underdog in this game, which they were. That was unprecedented in and of itself, the fact that a team is undefeated,
right,
7-0, and they're at home, and they're underdogs. Hello. Like, what that just doesn't happen. So maybe he felt like, you know, his ego was bruised a little bit. So, okay, solid point, and I agree with it, but excuses will undoubtedly come to the surface almost in every circumstance when it comes to sports.
Oh, yeah.
One way or the other.
They always do.
One way or the other, excuses will always come to the forefront, and injuries is the most convenient one.
That's a crybaby way to get out of it.
But it's the most convenient one, and it's the easiest one to use instead of saying, yes, I lost the game.
It's also a loser mentality.
That's true, but it's easy.
How about Bill Belichick's handshake with Tony Dungy? First of all, I'm surprised mildly that he even shook his hand. It doesn't surprise me at all the reaction he got, because I mean, how would you feel if someone compared you to Barry Bonds?
Yeah, that's
and really didn't retract that or back off from it when he was asked about it by members of the Patriots media in last week's conference calls.
I don't see why, even in general, coaches have to shake hands after a game.
It is a sportsmanship gesture. It's a tradition.
But sportsmanship now in sports is so far gone. It's not even in the equation anymore. I don't see why it's even necessary. Maybe I'm just Maybe I'm just too much of a
we
jerk.
Should just, you just think we should hate on everybody now?
No, I didn't say that. I said you don't have to go and hit. You don't have to give a guy a handshake, some guy you just beat or just lost to. I mean, imagine if you – I mean, sure, I mean, it must have been a little tough for Belichick because what Dungy said about him, but how tough was it for Joe Gibbs to go up to Belichick after that game where they got blown out 52-7 or whatever it was? Mm-hmm. I mean, that in and of itself is tough. Yeah, okay, Belichick had – it's his right to do what he does. If he doesn't want to shake his hand, fine. And that's fine. He did, and I have absolutely no problem with it.
I never
whatsoever.
Said that.
None whatsoever, the fact he didn't shake his hand.
And the other reason here is the fact that some of the national commentators are talking about how injuries might have been a factor here for the Colts, and yet last year injuries were not a factor in the Colts beating the Patriots. Well, you have to show some consistency, number one. And frankly, I think Steve Young is about as worthless as teats on a hog. Okay, he's worthless. They serve no purpose. He serves no purpose as someone who knows what he's talking about. He has an agenda. Tom Jackson, maybe a little bit, but around here you got to understand Tom Jackson's sort of held off to the side and put in kind of his own category for his. Let me tell you this: they hate their coach comment.
Yeah,
a couple of years
that
ago.
That
sunk him here in New England. And I don't think that's a recoverable mistake that he made. Because if he believed it or he was fed wrong information, whatever it was, he should have double checked it. Because it cooked him here.
It
could not have been further from the truth.
It did.
So you put those two guys together, I just don't think that, you know, when you see them talking, I think you should just turn down the sound or hit the mute button and wait until somebody else's gums start flapping, because that actually will mean more than what Steve Young and Tom Jackson say.
You're right. There is something to be said.
I don't even know that it's worth even going on anymore.
No,
I really admire Steve Young as a player. He was a great player. He's a Hall of Fame player. But he's, as an analyst, he has an agenda. It is it's blatant. You can see it, and I think he's forgotten. I think he's forgotten what it was like when he was a player, because he was a quarterback on those 49er teams that used to beat the crap out of teams all the time.
Sure.
And not think two bleeps about it.
Yep.
So, you know.
It
looks to be, you know, I mean, pretty hypocritical.
It's one of those. All I'm going to say on that is this: pointing out the obvious that the Colts were hurt by Harrison not in the game. If that's the number one thing on your agenda, then I could have been an analyst when I was in high school, because everybody knows that Harrison not in the lineup is going to hurt the Colts. You're pointing out the most obvious, ridiculous statements. It's like, okay, you know, analysts are supposed to go deeper into the game.
You really want to get into the nitpicking. Okay, so they didn't have Marvin Harrison. That's fine. The Patriots really didn't have a healthy Richard Seymour either.
Exactly. That's why it's really...
They didn't have Eugene Wilson either.
All I want to know from the analyst is give me the injury report. Then after that, I don't need to know that Marvin Harrison not being in the lineup hurt the Colts. Obviously, it did. He's Marvin Harrison. Right. It doesn't matter who they're playing. They could be playing the Dolphins.
Put somebody out there. You know, Anthony Gonzalez dropped a couple of balls, too. Steve in Montana. Has Don Shula been sniffing his own depends?
Oh, here we go.
What connection could Spygate have to an undefeated season? The commissioner stated that the tapes made during the Jets game were not used to affect the outcome of that game. How could they be? They were confiscated from the guy doing the taping. Is he insinuating that that's still going on? What a sour old man. It's very good email, Steve. Here's what I think about the whole Don Shula whining thing. That's just it. He's getting nervous.
Yep.
People only react defensively when they're nervous. And he's nervous that 72 Dolphins record is about to go.
And how sweet would that be if it got taken away?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that would be the best.
Of course, he'll be the first person that they come look for a soundbite, and he'll try to back out of it somewhat gracefully, but he's kind of already put his foot in his mouth. And so, I'm of the opinion, you know, Coach Shula, with all due respect, you're a Hall of Famer, you're a great coach, you've been so good for so many causes over the years, okay? You won't be getting any more Nutrisystems commercials if you don't learn to say the right things.
And you don't want to lose that Nutrisystem deal.
No, you don't want to lose that deal. Don't want to lose that deal.
But honestly, though, and this is what's going to be really interesting for me if the Patriots continue this undefeated march, okay? The Patriots, would you agree right now, in the NFL, the landscape of the NFL, probably the most disliked team nationwide?
Probably. I'd still probably so. I mean, I think that there's still quite a bit of dislike for teams like the Raiders, but the Raiders just aren't good enough really to matter overall.
So
that
would
be one.
Say,
and I'd say that there's still some anti-Dallas Cowboy out there for their decades of being America's team, even though I think there's probably more that like them. But there's still some haters out there. And there are probably a couple of, like Baltimore would be a team because of the reputation they've had on defense and some guys that have somewhat – shall we say, shady backgrounds and pasts and things they've been involved in, like Ray Lewis of the Ravens and such. But from start to finish, yeah, I'd say that it's quite a metamorphosis that the Patriots have undergone since being their own America's team in 2001 when we were all Patriots around here.
Exactly.
To what has transpired now to 2007.
So you would say that they – okay, so we agree on that.
I would say so, yeah.
Is there a more hated team in the history of the NFL than the 72 Dolphins? Nationwide, does anybody who's not a Dolphin fan look back and go, man, that was great? Nobody does. At least I've talked to.
I'd say the 72 Dolphins would be up there. I'd say that probably one or two of those Steeler teams would be up there. I would also argue that probably the first two Green Bay teams that won Super Bowl I and II would probably have to be considered at the time hated teams, especially for fans of the AFL.
Okay. But
maybe not to the extent of the 72 Dolphins.
Because they're the only undefeated team, and that's why they stand out. Here is my point. Let me also throw in
and I'm not sure the exact year, but I'm going to say probably one or two of those Oakland teams when Madden was still coaching.
Yep.
When they had the Just Win Baby moniker going on, and they had guys themselves that were a bit edgy, shall we say.
Sure.
You know, but they had some great athletes. They had Fred Biletnikoff, you know, and they obviously had, Kenny Stabler and Phil Villapiano, a linebacker. I mean, some great players. I think George Blanda was still kicking then.
And when he can take your center and just blow him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, probably those Raider teams were probably not well-liked either.
But this is my whole point.
Okay.
As if the Patriots continue on this undefeated streak, which it looks like they have a pretty good chance of doing, okay? What does America root for? Do they root for the most hated team in the NFL right now, or do they root against them? It's such an interesting thing for me because these are two East Coast teams.
It's because they are winning with such convincing performances, with the exception of last Sunday, that if they get back on their blowout ways over these last seven games, that naturally I think America is going to root for the underdog, which will be the NFC champion, because we love underdogs in this country. That is just us by nature. America is a country that was founded on nothing but underdogs. We were an underdog to the British back in the 1700s.
There you go.
Okay? This country was built on the underdog. And so, you know, if we're the big, bad, you know, Patriot bullies here, naturally most of the country is going to, you know, get a certain amount of glee if the Patriots lose that game, and probably will by therefore, they will also be, you know, rooting against them.
Do you think most of the country wants to see the Patriots go 16-0?
I'd say that there are some football fans, and I mean by that, I mean fans who have a certain knowledge of the history of the game that would like to see this happen. And I would say more of a casual fan probably wouldn't. That's at least my initial inclination here, because, you know, what the Patriots, if they are able to pull this off, and again, it's if, all right, because I'm on record on this program as saying that I don't think the Patriots will do it. I think there's a stumble somewhere.
Look at the stats.
Stats are overwhelming. I just still think somewhere a stumble is going to occur and is going to take it out of play before we get to the Super Bowl. And frankly, if it's a meaningless last game of the year against the Giants, nobody's going to care. They're going to have everything sewn up by then anyway. The bottom line here is winning the Super Bowl and going down potentially as one of the greatest, if not the greatest team to have ever played in a single season, which I still think is attainable even if they don't go 16-0. Now, if they do, I think it's a slam dunk. If they go 19-0, it's a slam dunk. This is the greatest team of all time.
No, that's true. That's true. And that's why Shula is so afraid. That's why he's paranoid.
That's right, because when you mention the greatest teams of all time in NFL history, the 72 Dolphins are always in the discussion.
Yeah. And honestly, do you think they deserve to be?
Well, yeah, because they went through their season undefeated. They played the games that were on their schedule and won them all, and nobody's ever done that. So, yes, they deserve to be in there. But here's what I have a problem with. they're still going to be in that discussion. You can't ever take.
Hold on.
Listen for a second here. You can't take 17-0 away from them. That's in the record books. It's done. Now, there may be people that say, well, okay, what the Patriots did in 2007 is different from what the Dolphins did in 72. Well, of course. First of all, there's 35 years of space. There's 35 years of growth. There's 35 years of maturation. There's 35 years of evolution of football players that go into this equation. This is a different universe that we are involved in now than the NFL was back in 1972. It does not mean that the Dolphins, based in their era and the time and the space in which they played, don't deserve to be in the conversation. They do.
They do. But they won't be in the conversation. Honestly, how often do you hear about the second place team? The team, the Patriots went 19-0.
So you're saying then that they would be relegated to second place status?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Of course they would be, and that's what Shula's so afraid of.
Well, okay, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. He's doing himself and his players a great disservice by opening up his mouth at all. He should keep his yap shut and say, hey, whatever the Patriots get, more power to them.
Absolutely.
Go for it.
We both agree on that.
And we stand by, hey, 17-0 speaks for itself. He should take the high road on this.
He shouldn't talk. He shouldn't talk.
Because whenever he talks, he only demeans further the accomplishment of those players in 1972.
And the fact that that is true, that is true. But from a Patriots standpoint, he just sounds like a loser. It, honestly, is what he sounds like. It sounds like he's already given up, like this is going to happen. Why are you making – listen, you talk when they go 16-0.
I wish you could just shut your big yapper.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Matt Foley. And I think I honestly believe this makes Shula exactly what the emailer said. Look like a grumpy old man that just is just, you know, oh, in my day, my team was better. That's pretty much all he's saying. And the fact that he has the audacity to bring up Spygate as a low blow. Talk about the games being played on the field. Don't talk about stuff that is now 8 weeks old. Okay, you really just look ridiculous.
I know.
But in fairness to the 72 Dolphins, if the Patriots do this and find a way to somehow go 16-0, which we both agree is probably not going to happen, if they somehow find a way to do it, of course the Dolphins will take a huge, huge hit. They won't be talked about nearly as much. No one's gonna dig back.
We won't be sending the TV cameras for their popping the champagne corks every year when the final undefeated team goes down.
And I'm getting sick of that. And fans across
the
country.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why fans are actually rude. Some fans, especially old school fans, are rooting for the Patriots to do this. They're sick of looking at the Dolphins celebrating that stupid thing every year.
That's why it's so ironic to me that the most hated team in the NFL today is trying to break a record that has never been done before, only by the 72 Dolphins. And I am extremely interested to see if there was some sort of a poll out there. Do you want to see them do it? Because I think there is a lot of venom against the 72 Dolphins, and a lot of people will take a lot of delight in leaving them out of the discussion, the 72 Dolphins, if the Patriots somehow manage to do this. And Shula is just making this worse. He's making his team look even worse, because you know what's going to happen now? Week 10, they're going to have Larry Zonka on TV. They're going to have Bob Greasy on TV. They're going to start having everybody on TV from this team talking about this. And now, what are they going to say? Oh, Don is just, you know, he's just freaking out. Don't listen to him. They're going to go exactly the route Shula went, and now they're all going to follow this one line, this company line, and it's ridiculous.
David sends his email from the Philippines. He says, I sent you a scenario last week where the game would live up to all the hype. Well, the game's been played now, and although it didn't quite match up to the scenario I outlined then, it was certainly close enough to suit me. Honestly, I hope we don't see the Colts again in the AFC Championship game because my diabetes makes me a good candidate for a heart attack, and I'm not sure I'd live through another
game
like that.
Might want to sit that one out.
Yeah, no kidding. No doubt the Colts gave us everything we can handle. Hang in there, Dave. About the only thing that I would complain about is the officiating. It wasn't totally awful. Most of the Pats' penalties were deserved. But that second long pass interference call looked completely wrong to me. There were also a couple of non-calls against Indy that could have been really important. I just don't understand why the NFL and what was perhaps the biggest regular season game in decades assigned a rookie ref. That, I think, is a legitimate gripe and beef and nitpick here on Humble Pie Tuesday.
Yes.
Why a guy – now, he's been in the NFL for, what, 8 years, I think I read? The guy who's the lead official?
I think
8 years as basically line judge, but this is his first year as a referee, which is the head guy, head crewman. And you're right. Big game like this, and they're putting a rookie ref in a game like this, I think that's a little bit stupid.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
That was Ed Hockley earlier here this season, wasn't it, Jason? Yeah.
That was great.
And that's the first time I've ever heard that. Do we ever have the call of who was the official that did something about there was a foul underneath the bottom of the pile, but we're giving the guy the business? Do you remember that? Do you remember that one?
The business. I don't know if that's in the rule book. Can we look that up? If giving the business, is that a 5-yard penalty?
Giving the guy the business.
5-yard penalty, 10-yard penalty.
I don't know what it was, but he's giving the guy the business. And then, and of course, his signal for giving the guy the business was holding his arm out to the left like this, taking his fist, and he's giving him the, you know, the screw motion like this.
By the way, while we're on the topic of this, can I just say this? Then I promise we'll move on because this is inane and stupid. The throwing the ball past the line of scrimmage move when the referee moves his arm behind his back like this, is that not the most awkward thing you've ever seen?
It looks like he's going to break. His arm's going to fall off.
Yeah.
He does that.
Yeah. You know. I just wanted to say that. I'm sorry.
I personally like the one where he holds his arms out to the side and then flaps.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. What is that? What is that?
That hold on just a second. That is
That's not unsportsmanlike conduct, is it?
Yes. Yeah. That's unsportsmanlike conduct. Yes.
Well, you know, these referee, you know, we you know, Humble Pie Tuesday, we're nitpicking so much. We're on the officials for their hand motions. This is really Humble Pie. This is delicious.
By the way, Dave says, I'm sending my Super Bowl prediction now. Okay.
Wow.
He says, Pats 38, Green Bay 28.
Well, he's got half of that right.
Yeah.
In my opinion,
I don't know about the Green Bay
right.
28 part, right?
Yeah, that's the one I'm not disagreeing
not
with.
Sure. Not sure at all.
With all due respect.
Exactly. All right, this one comes from Chelsea, who says, can you believe it? I mean, what a game that was. Finally, some edge-of-our-seat football. I have to give it up to the Colts' defense. They are bananas. Every time they were putting pressure on Brady, but as soon as he had time to get in the pocket, he made big plays, and Mosses went in to catch in midair, looking somewhat similar to Michael Jordan in his day. Who does that? And she said, I think Wes Welker is so underrated. Poor guy, but the plays he made were very important ones. And how about his punt returns, 30, 35, 40 yards? And while the Colts couldn't even get out of the shadow of their own goalposts, like the commentator said during the game, he runs so close to the ground, he might as well run under the defense. He's small enough, but it works for him.
That's about the best summation of Wes Welker I've ever heard. And honestly, hats off to you, Chelsea, for that, because he really is – It's unbelievable just how shifty he is. He has an unbelievable amount of agility. The ability to elude tacklers at almost any point in the field, whether it be in a punt return or whether it be in a simple out pattern, you know, from Brady, he is sensational. And that Randy Moss catch, did that come out of Madden? I honestly thought somebody turned on the PlayStation when Randy Moss made that catch. Absolutely jaw-dropping. I think that's the best catch he's had all season. He didn't even lift his right arm to catch that ball. He didn't even need his right arm to snatch that one out of the air. Just an unbelievable catch. And just I wish it was for a touchdown, because we probably talk about it a lot more. But.
Absolutely. All right, Craig from South Carolina wanted to finish his thought before Gary blew him up in the opening hour of our program here.
Okay.
He said, Seymour blocked the Colts' 50-yard field goal attempt, but the NFL can't make up its mind as to whether he did or not. NFL.com's game book shows no field goals blocked under any of the statistics, just says 0-0. Yet the play-by-play description plainly states 8:32, Vinatieri, 50-yard field goal, no good, wide left. Center 48, Jay Snow, holder 17, H. Smith, N.E. Seymour 93, deflected kick. Says, what the hell? Give the man his props. He kept the Colts from putting three more on the board. Certainly, you could say that was a key play in the game, because if the situation were different and Vinatieri had made that field goal, that last drive before Roosevelt Colvin came up with the fumble recovery could have been played vastly differently.
Well, I mean, that the fact that New England was able to allow Indianapolis into their red zone, I believe, twice, and both times Indianapolis was forced to attempt a field goal, that is really what set the tempo of this game. Honestly, the way this game started out in the first quarter, Indianapolis could have been up 14-0 in about 5 minutes. The way they were moving the ball with ease, the Patriots went 3-and-out. The Patriots have scored a touchdown every possession, every opening possession of the season until that game. And not only did they not get a touchdown, they didn't even get a first down. Indianapolis came out and stopped them 3-and-out on the first possession. So the fact that the Colts were able to stop the Patriots like that and have two long sustained drives with Joe Addai having 10, 15, 20-yard runs, and then only get 3 points, that was huge for New England.
Big.
Huge. The fact that the first quarter, the tempo was set by Indianapolis early on. At least they tried to. The Patriots were having none of it. They stopped them in the red zone, and that's why this game was so competitive, because honestly, like I said, If they don't force the Colts to attempt those field goals, 14-0, folks. 14-0, and this game is completely different.
We finally saw some signs of red zone D when we didn't see any earlier in the year with this team.
That would have been.
That is a step in the right direction.
Exactly. If you ask me to nitpick the one thing I'm worried about last week, it's the red zone defense. But after the first quarter, nobody should worry about
that
anymore.
I'm not really worried about it anymore because it looks like it's coming around.
Absolutely.
And just, you know, at a coincidence, a guy like Seymour returns to the lineup, and all of a sudden red zone
there
D gets a little bit better.
There it is. He's the best in the business.
Brian in Saugus, Mass. says, I can only watch the game with people that understand football. We were talking about this in the last hour.
Yes, we were.
I had to sit my girlfriend down during this year's preseason game. She understands the game now, and she watches the game with me, which was great because she's a great cook. Very lucky you are, Brian. Very good. He says, as for nitpicking, I don't think that Jarvis Green gets enough credit. He made a lot of big plays. I won't be able to hear today's podcasts until tomorrow. So I'm sorry if someone has already talked about this. Well, then Brian will be listening to us tomorrow. So, Brian, you're listening to this right now. It's Wednesday.
Okay? Yes.
Make sure you check your calendar.
It is.
But it's a good
point. Know what day it is. Okay. And also, you know, probably not the best strategy to have the girlfriend watch preseason NFL.
No, because that's
not a good
football.
Move. That's not a good move.
You have to take some time in the early season, Brian, and sit her down and watch some games that really count.
Or wait until your team stinks. And then you can do it at any point during the season. Like, if you're a Dolphins fan and you have a girlfriend you're trying to get, you know, week 15, doesn't matter. Just as good as week seven.
Get the food first and then sit her down.
Exactly. Priorities.
I like your boobs.
Priorities, John.
I did it.
Priorities.
Andy in Vermont. The Patriots did not play their best game, but still found a way to win that game. You guys hit it right on with the officials. Ellis Hobbs robbed, raped, pillaged on that pass interference. It should have been offensive interference, if anything. All that aside, I saw some of the good old Pat's toughness, patience, and perseverance, and all the media making excuses for the Colts' injuries, blah, blah, blah. But going back to the AFC Championship, no one said, well, the Patriots didn't have this guy or that guy, including the Patriots, because the Patriots do not use excuses. Adai did have a big game due to the game plan and invited the run, declined the pass. Bill B. noted it for game planning like that. Going back to the Bills versus Giants Super Bowl, so I don't think it was all that horrible. The Colts couldn't sustain. That's why all that late scoring earlier in the year paid off. Finish the game. That's their statement. Got to play the whole game, not 45 to 50 minutes.
That's definitely a fair statement.
Players said that in the locker room, by the way. They said they were happy that they had played all the previous games like they had, you know, when a lot of the questions of them running up the scores came into issue, because it taught them how to finish. And so when they did get behind, they knew how to finish the game.
In fact, you could argue Indianapolis did not know how to finish because they had the chances to finish that game and didn't do it. First, on your point about the referees, I would love to find this out, and I probably would need the LAF Sports Bureau to do this for me. But the last time a franchise set their franchise record for penalty yards in a game and still won. Because something tells me that would be something that hasn't.
That's actually
if I had to guess. Probably hasn't happened in a very, very long time. If you could find that, that'd be great.
I don't know if I have that
but
here.
I also want to point this out. You talk about teams being able to finish games. If you're an Indianapolis Colts fan, you could have a potential GOAT in Reggie Wayne. That drop that Wayne had late in the game when Manning put that ball perfectly right on the money and Wayne was unable to catch it, more than likely would have been a touchdown. That's how you finish games. The Patriots make that play. Moss, Welker makes that catch. Wayne did not. I don't know why. 9 times out of 10, he probably catches it. Reggie Wayne is a fantastic talent, don't get me wrong. But that was a huge play in that game as well. And you talk about finishing a game, teams that finish games catch the ball in that instance, and the Colts didn't do it.
Yeah, I don't have that number, but that's a number that I'm going to ask Russell Baxter for on Thursday, see if he knows the answer to that one, whether or not a team has ever set their franchise record for penalty yards in a game.
And still won. I mean, it's 146 yards penalized on 10 penalties. That's ludicrous. No. I mean, if you look at that line
77 of it come on those two, you know.
Those are still humongous plays. I mean, it's still if you look at that line and just say, hey, if a team gets penalized 10 times for 146 yards, you think they're going to win?
No.
How many people say they're going to?
No,
exactly.
You wouldn't think.
Nobody does.
Josh sends his email. He goes, and he agrees with you, by the way, Tom. He says, I agree the running game does scare me as well. The one thing I am surprised at is Heath Evans does great every time he's in the game, and during preseason was doing awesome, in my opinion. I just hope the feature I hope they feature him a bit more because I love Maroney. It just seems like he gets hurt too easily, and every time he misses, it takes twice as long for him to get back to his old self. I'm sure Bill Belichick will figure out a solution, also now that Morris is gone for the season. I would just like to see a bit more solid of a running game, but I'm just being picky.
It is, and you asked me to be nitpicky, and I was.
There you go. That's why we have this
today.
That's
right, and I'm glad that someone out there agrees with me on this issue, because nobody wants to say anything bad about the Patriots offense, and why should you, because of the way they've played all season. But it is a fair point to state that Sammy Morris, the insurance policy, and really the best back on the roster probably right now is Sammy Morris, and he's out. And that is a big issue. But we've all seen what Maroney can do. This is in no way a slight on Lawrence Maroney. I look back to that game against Cincinnati last season, where we saw what Maroney could do in Cincinnati when he destroyed the Bengals. The guy has unbelievable potential, but I worry about the fact that he's a little fragile. It's something that you have to factor in. And Heath Evans, you know, yeah, okay, that's true. Heath Evans is really a natural fullback. I mean, Heath Evans is a feature back. I really don't know. He had a great game in Miami. I believe it was last season. He had a great game in Miami. He really was the feature guy, but that was against his old team. Maybe a little more motivation there, but Heath Evans getting more carries. I see that point, but really, you know, this is Maroney's offense as it should be, and Morris's offense when he's healthy.
I agreed. All right, William in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Guys, it was nice to win this game. Most people believe we will see the Colts again, and I hope we do. I would love to stick it to the Colts when it matters the most in the AFC Championship.
Okay.
I most likely am in the minority and truly believe that we could come back if the officials would hold or just hold on to those flags for a couple of series. Do you guys believe, like I do, that with a better, more experienced officiating crew and home field, the next game will not be as close?
Yes. I think... No, you know, you talked about it earlier about the underdog mentality of us as human beings. Human beings are affected by where the game is played, and that does not spare the officials. The officials know where they are. They know what's going on. They are affected by the crowd noise. They're affected by the home crowd. It inevitably happens. Does it decide games? Probably not, but it has some impact on the momentum of the game. Because, you know, if you call someone for a ticky-tack holding penalty in the middle of an 8-play, 73-yard drive, that's going to be a problem. That's going to get in the way of the offense. It's going to affect the flow of the game. But you're right. I think if this game is here at Gillette Stadium, Patriots probably going into this game would have been 9-10-point favorites. Probably.
He says also, what is up with the coach-to-quarterback communication, and why is it dismissed so easily by the national media? Reverse that situation, and oh my goodness, the attack would be enormous. Your thoughts? And he says, by the way, P.S., can I vote for one of you for Mississippi governor? Yep, that'll be me. I'm your Republican candidate.
Spell that
last name. You can write me in R-O-O-K-E. Just put it right down there on your ballot, William, and I would be happy to run for Mississippi governor.
I'm not old enough to run, so I'll just sit that one out.
Okay,
but to answer your question.
But you can vote, though.
Yes, I can. Okay, I can do that. To answer your question, probably. It's really one of those instances where I'm trying to get the best way to phrase this. The way the Patriots do things and the way they're perceived in the national media is certainly different than Indianapolis. I think if you wait a year and let Spygate have a year behind us, maybe it might get back to normal. But you're right. I think if the Patriots do something, they're going to be perceived differently, and that's unfair, but that's the reality of it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, to an extent, sure.
I mean, if they do something against the rules now, everything is going to get brought up, what happened in week one with the Jets, and now with, you know, of course, with Mangini, and now with this, you know, with the Patriots complaining about the supposed fake crowd noise, anytime there's any sort of illegal action going on here, then yeah, the Patriots are going to be perceived a little differently, and that's just something that Patriot fans are just going to have to deal with, I think.
Andy in Vermont writes back, he says, how about taking Tiki Barber out of retirement? I don't think that they want Tiki Barber.
Wow.
I don't personally like Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber, I think the fact that he sort of quote-unquote announced his retirement in the middle of last year was a direct slap in the face of Tom Coughlin, and I thought it was a childish, petty thing to do, and I think it led a great deal to their 2-6 demise down the stretch last year. I don't really know that I want a guy like Tiki Barber. Now, of course, I'm the one that just said not too long ago, hey, how about Ricky Williams coming in here? What's up with that? You know, the Patriots couldn't mold him, and
keep him in the locker room and put. But see, Tiki Barber, though, is different. Tiki Barber is the kind of guy that's got to be a feature back. He's the kind of guy that has to be, I think, the center of attention. And I don't think he, first of all, I don't think Tiki Barber would do it. Because if he wasn't
if he wasn't
going to be the lead guy, he wouldn't come out of retirement.
I don't think he'd come out of retirement anyways. But by the way, did Tiki go to Texas? Okay, moving on.
No, went to Virginia.
But Tiki Barber, hey, if they could make that happen, where do I sign? Where do I sign? Honestly, the Tiki Barber left almost at the top. He was a top five running back, bar none.
The Williams scenario is much more plausible than Tiki Barber. Much more plausible.
I mean,
much
they're both not going to happen.
I just say that it's more believable because you have a guy who wants to come back as opposed to a guy who didn't want to play for Coughlin last year and quit on his team halfway through the season.
So does the level of plausibility matter if they're both not going to happen?
Sure.
I just blew your mind.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely, sure. It just makes for better cannon fodder.
It does.
That's all.
It does.
More believable cannon fodder.
It does.
All right, John says, gentlemen, after the game was finally over, I began to breathe again. Whew.
Good.
I'm still concerned about our D. I can't remember seeing an assembly of pure talent who has problems stopping a run. Additionally, I'm sorry, I just don't buy the Lawrence Maroney hype. I haven't seen it yet. He has had some spectacular runs, but on the everyday, pound it through, get that 5-yard first down run, he falls short. Not that I want Dylan back, but I'm getting nervous. Aside from that, Matt Light is awesome. Brady Moss, just amazing. And Rodney Harrison still rocks.
Okay.
I actually thought Matt Light had a couple of problems.
A couple?
Yeah.
A couple?
Two that I can recall, anyway. But that's the first time this year that I've really seen that happen.
When was the last time you saw a leg whip? Wait, isn't that what they call it, a leg whip?
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of cheesy. I mean, I'm just kind of like, you know, that kind of stuff happens on, you know, a lot more than it's ever called.
Matt Light had a tough game, and you know what? To credit Matt Light, there isn't a player in the league that is tougher to defend than Dwight Freeney. At the defensive end spot, period. His speed and quickness is unparalleled, like I've never seen before. And Matt Light did have a tough game, but it's tough to say that Matt Light had a good week. I don't even think Matt Light would say he had a good week. I think he had a lot of problems. But hey, he's played great every
Bottom
other
line
week.
Is you still won the game
exactly.
And you know Tom still has his head and his faculties, so that's you know.
And that's the important thing.
That's exactly right. John says, since when does Roger Goodell take anyone's word for it? So the Colts say the noise was nothing? Oh, well, excuse me. I forgot that Tony the Halo Dungy and Satan, America's quarterback Manning, would never, ever cheat. How could we ever think that? Just because they have been accused of it for years. Had another team other than Belichick's, then the Belichick's made an accusation, an investigation will be launched. Look, I know the whole sound thing is really not a big deal, but I just hate the idea that the beloved Colts are above the law.
Okay,
I think that's a general feeling amongst most Patriots fans. I think most Patriots fans feel like, you know what, you know, the Colts, something's funny here. And like I told you earlier, Tom, where there's smoke, there's usually always a little fire, a little flame going on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something going on here, and I think most Patriots fans seem to be a little upset that there isn't a more serious look being taken, that the NFL was quick to dismiss this.
But let's have some consistency here, Patriots fans. Hold the phone. Let's have a little – we talk about wanting to have consistency. Let's practice what we preach. When the Spygate scandal happened, did anybody say Brady – Maroney, Seymour, Harrison, no. Don't mention Peyton Manning with the supposed crowd noise gate. Don't mention the players. If you don't want the national media to do it, you shouldn't do it either. That's the first thing I want to say. Manning and Dungy probably have nothing to do with this. They probably have no idea this is even happening, first of all. But to the larger point about the Colts, yeah, they're perceived differently. I mean, hey, Peyton Manning is probably the most watched man on Sundays because not only does he play in a game every Sunday, but he's on about 79 commercials that are run all across the country during other games that have nothing to do with Indianapolis. He really right now, if you had to argue, is the face of the league. Could Brady be the face of the league? Sure, he just doesn't want to do all the commercials and all the stuff that Manning is doing. But yeah, so I think that does set Manning and the Colts apart a little bit, and that's just, again, That's the perception now. It has to be dealt with, but let's be consistent about it, okay? If you're going to criticize Indianapolis and tell the national media, don't say Brady had an unfair advantage, don't say this is all Brady's fault, and stuff, don't put Manning into it either. Let's be consistent. Let's play it both ways.
Dave in Indianapolis writes, guys, I'm out here in Indy and just wanted to drop my fellow Patriots supporters a quick note. They're making a huge deal out of Kraft's kid calling the Colts cheaters and about the noise thing. Hey, I would have done the same thing after I heard it. Anyway, the media is taking this and running with it. They're saying stuff like, those chowderheads are calling us cheaters and all kinds of crap. I'm so sick of hearing all the excuses they're making for their team. I had a whole house full of Colts fans on Sunday talking smack to me for three quarters of football. They sure shut up in the fourth quarter. I am so glad our team won because I would have taken a beating at work on Monday. Guess what? People at work were just crying Monday. A few were good sports and said good game, but most of the fans out here are cry babies. First of all, big mistake, Dave. Okay? If you're actually, you know, going to have fans over, don't invite fans of the other team.
Yes, that should be rule number one.
Okay,
that automatically.
If you're a Patch fan
game
in Indianapolis, I realize that would be difficult for you to do. So in that regard, watch the game by yourself, like I like to do.
Yes,
and then nobody bothers you.
Eject the party. Get them out. Eject everybody. They're gone. John doesn't want you here.
That's
get out.
Right. Yeah, you're take off.
And also,
too many questions. That's it. Enough. You're out.
Can we also send a memo to Indianapolis sports talk radio host calling Boston?
Chowderheads?
Chowderheads. Okay. The only thing worse than that is calling it Bean Town or Baked Beans. Okay, that's just, no one does that. Stop it. It's awful. It's absolutely awful.
What do we call Indianans? What do we call
I don't know.
What are they?
NASCAR fans? Does that work? NASCAR? No?
How about
do they
call,
like that? They like NASCAR in Indianapolis?
How about this? How about we call them irrelevant?
Yes, that's good.
That
I like
that.
That
work for you?
I like that. Irrelevant
okay.
Indianapolis. I like that. But it's better than being called Chowderheads. Okay, that's just ludicrous.
Here's a good one. John sends a letter to Mr. Shula.
An open letter to John.
Dear John, Don.
Okay.
You no longer matter, nor do your comments. The Pats do not care about breaking your record, but I for one hope that they do just to throw that stupid comment in your face. Take a look in the mirror, and the calendar hanging next to it is no longer 1972. Deal with it.
Okay, short and sweet. I like that. And we'll see if we can get a copy of that to Don Shula. I like that. That's good. It's Don Shula looking in the mirror and realizing, wow, it's not the 70s. Something tells me he's not that out of it.
He also says on WAAF this morning, he says, Matt Light was asked about the franchise record for penalties, and he replied, well, we're all about breaking records.
You know what?
If I like
you're
going to
break
that's
one,
good.
Why not break them all?
That's good.
Why not break them all?
I like that.
You know, who cares? Break
that's
them all.
I like
sure.
That. That's perfect.
That's good.
This one comes from Scott in New Hampshire. I think the coaches and the players in all professional sports should be required to shake hands with the opposition. It is a game. After the game, the players should act civil and professional. And honestly, I don't disagree with that because that's what you try to teach young people. That's what, you know, I try to teach my little leaguers. It's what I try to teach my kids. I mean, you know, the fact is it is a game. You should be able to act civil and professional and still be able to try to knock the other's brains out, you know, especially when the sport is physically demanding as the sport of football is. Because after all, you know, we do live to play another day.
Okay. No. And hey, if people shaking hands after a sporting event, I have no problem with it. Making them do it? Yes. I have a big problem with that. This is not Little League, okay? This is not high school football, okay? This is professional sports. These guys have grudges behind the scenes that we don't even know about most of the time. Don't make them shake hands. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm too much of a jerk, you know, to understand this, and that's fine if that's the case. But in all honesty, don't make them shake hands. That's why I think it's ridiculous. Not the act of shaking hands. That's not what I think is ridiculous. What's ridiculous is that coaches and players feel like they have to, okay? You shouldn't have to feel like you have to, and that's why I have no problem with Belichick having that chilly handshake with Dungy. That was.
Well, I think you just have to put yourself. You have to put yourself in their shoes, and whether or not you're right or you're wrong, if you have your name put up next to someone who, obviously, for whatever reason, is sort of persona non grata in this country, sports-wise, like Barry Bonds, how would you feel?
Pretty bad.
If your name was associated with Barry Bonds, if you're, you know, a cheater like Barry Bonds, if someone calls you that and you don't really have a chance to defend yourself.
Well, look at it this way. If you're a professional in any other job, you work in an office, you know, you work in downtown Boston, whatever, and somebody equates you to someone who got fired for, you know, stealing or something. I mean, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be compared with that. Something
not.
That's been done illegal. No, nobody wants that knock on their, you know, they're on. I'm not going to have reputation, so, I mean, of course. And why would you want to go up and shake that guy's hand after a day at work? You wouldn't.
Well, so, you do it to be a good sport. You do it because, you know, you respect his ability to be a coach. But, you know, you don't have to go up and hug him and, you know, say, you know, how's it going?
You just, you know, basically you
acknowledge his presence and you move on. And that's what he did.
I just hate feeling like you have to. That's all I'm saying.
Well, no, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want to, Tom. But here's the problem. If you don't do it, you're branded a loser. You're branded a poor sport.
But not if you win.
You're still branded a poor sport.
Hey, and you know what?
And I don't think that's something. I don't think that's a place you really want to go.
And that's fine. But that's the person's choice. Let them do
it. Sure, it's their choice. And but again, this is also a game of public relations here. And enough bad has already happened, to this team. I think since the early part of the season, they don't need another strike against them like that. To give the national media, you know, to go off them again. And I think somebody somewhere in this organization probably realizes that.
All I'm saying is sportsmanship is a lost art. It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, it doesn't exist to the extent it did 10 years ago,
okay,
20 years ago.
And it's going to continue to erode over time,
but
trust
it doesn't
me.
Have to.
But it will. And that's why it will.
Well, that's why we need to see more of those guys at least, you know, giving each other a perfunctory handshake out there.
But you know it's fake. Why does that give anybody any gratification when they know it's fake? It shouldn't.
Because, again, you're supposed to be civil. You should at least be civil. You should be civil. It's the way civilized human beings are supposed to act.
This is football. This is football, okay? Somebody tell me that football is civilized. Anybody out there civilized?
Football is an uncivilized game. Football is an uncivilized game for a civil society. I sound like John Facenda on that one.
Football is a civilized game. Football is an uncivilized game.
I feel like I'm in
for
class
for a civilized
again.
Society.
I feel like I'm in class again. This is what I feel like. Tom, you're wrong. Tom, you're just a bad person. You don't like sportsmanship.
No. I didn't tell you that.
Unbelievable.
I didn't tell you that.
No, I know you didn't. You know. What can I say?
All right. Neil says, I'm thrilled with the victory and was glad that despite all the penalties, we were able to rally. Pass protection, another key area of concern, but again, they did give Brady time when he needed it in the end. Brady spoke of the Colts doing some different things to them, and what did you guys notice that was different?
Pass protection has not been a problem whatsoever this year.
Yeah.
He's nothing.
Colts doing some different things to them.
That's just the extreme talent of Brock and Freeney.
The only thing that they really did, and I don't know that I noticed it so much as I kind of felt like this is something that they would do going in. I knew that they were going to do what they could to take away the sidelines and take away the deep routes. And so that's why you saw Randy Moss go over the middle, which he doesn't really do all that often. He's not a very good in the middle receiver. But the Patriots were able to go into the middle, utilizing some of his talents. I know Watson caught one or two. You had Welker also do the same. The touchdown pass to Falk was right up the gut. So, you know, they were taking what the Colts were giving them, and they took advantage of that.
Yeah, well, I want to harp on this. Pass protection has been the absolute – I put that probably at the bottom of concerns for this team, even after what happened with Indianapolis. And you know what? But you saw Brady's poise. And that's why Brady is so ridiculously good. Even in a game where he's not getting the protection he's used to, he still finds the open man. He still doesn't make a mistake. He still doesn't try to force a throw into coverage. He makes the smart decision every single time, it seems. And the interceptions he had, that one, the first pick he had, probably a bad decision, one of his lone bad decisions of the season. The second one by Brackens, that was just a fantastic individual effort. Brady threw that ball right on the money as good as he could, but Brackens just basically made one of the best plays of the year and got that and snatched that ball out of the air. But the bottom line is the pass protection is not a problem. When you have two defensive ends on the other side of the ball, like Dwight Freeney and Raheem Brock, who are so talented at edge rushing, mm-hmm. They're sensational. They are so good, and there are very few tandems in the league that are as talented as they are. You're going to have pass protection problems. I don't care if you have a stone wall in front of Tom Brady. You're going to have problems, and they did, but they still managed to win. Pass protection, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just saying relax. Relax on the pass protection. It's fine. This offensive line has been superb.
Neil says, the officiating in this game was horrible. The three pass interference calls against us were just pathetic, and the crew should be fired. Samuel, this call early in the game was borderline, I thought, very ticky-tacky considering the game. The one on Hobbs, that call should have been called on Wayne. Hobbs had position and was going for the ball before being tackled by Wayne. That absolutely was a grotesque call.
That's true.
And Moss, this call should have gone against the defense or been a no call because Moss did not push off. His arms never were extended out, and that is the key thing in offensive pass interference. You have to see the receiver's arms extend. They never did. He says here, I think the NFL was attempting to win this game for the Colts and their boy Manning. F them. This was almost as bad as the game in the playoffs between the Steelers and the Colts. Coincidence that the Colts were involved? I think not. The NFL should be ashamed of themselves and better be careful of what has taken place with the NBA refs.
Oh, wow.
Some strong words there, Neil.
That's a little.
Strong words.
I was with you at the beginning. And then as we went on, you went, I mean, you know.
But you know what? Here are the repercussions. Somebody asked me this a couple of weeks ago. It's like, you know, really, I mean, what did Tim Donaghy do, you know, in terms that was really so bad that guys probably don't already do? And how is he going to affect other things? This is how, what Tim Donaghy did in the NBA, this is how it's going to affect other sports.
Yep.
Because what you're doing now is creating that sense of doubt in people's minds whenever you have a crappily officiated game. And that's not a word, but I just made it up. When you ever have a crappily officiated game like you had on Sunday. I mean, it was bad. It was bad. You know, fortunately, it didn't go against the Patriots. You really can't blame, and you never should blame, the officiating for a win or a loss. Frankly, there were more bad calls against the Patriots, so it was a non-factor. Although, you know, if there had been more bad calls against the Colts, then I would think the Colts fans would have a right to gripe. Just like if there were more bad calls against the Pats, there would be Pats fans griping about that.
Of course.
But that's not necessarily the case. Point is that if you have a referee like you had in the NBA who, you know, admittedly was on the take somewhere with somebody, you know, trying to drive some influence, it's going to open up, you know, a whole boatload of doubt in any sport. Well, if an NBA official could do it, how come one in the NFL could do it? The answer is they could.
They could, of course.
They absolutely
could. The referees control the game.
This is why, now in my opinion, all major professional sports need instant replay. That is the one thing that will keep officials honest.
Well, okay.
The cameras
don't lie.
The cameras don't have an opinion. The cameras show you what is and what isn't.
In theory, you're right, but obviously in the NFL, you only have a certain number of challenges, so it won't affect everything. I don't think instant replay.
Well, you also need instant replay in baseball.
I don't see. Well, they're talking about
that.
I don't think
instant replay in baseball needs to be done for balls and strikes. That needs to stay under the domain of the umpire. But you should use replays for calls in the field on foul or fair, or whether or not a ball is home run or a ground rule double, or if a fan touched it or whatever. Those are the kind of things that, quite honestly, in a split second, very difficult. And being a baseball umpire in my own right, that's a hard call to make, and you go with your gut instinct 99% of the time. Some of the times you're wrong. And I'm thinking that if you have the ability to get the call right, that, as an umpire, is your charge to get the call right.
Now, okay, friends of mine texted me during the game, the fix is in. You know, like, you know, jokingly, like, oh, you know, maybe this is a Donaghy situation. But, you know, first of all, the Samuel call was legit. Okay, Samuel did not show any visible sign that he thought it was a bad call. It was an obvious pass interference call. The other two, absolutely right. The Samuel call was 100% legit. That was pass interference, first and foremost. But about the officials, don't buy into that the officials wanted to fix this game, or the NFL wanted to fix this game to make the Colts better. The Colts are the Super Bowl champions, okay? They don't need any help from the NFL offices to win any games. And last, it's a family show. Clean up the emails, okay? Clean up the emails with the cursing, okay? This is a family show.
It's the internet. You got to get used to this, buddy. All right.
I'm just kidding.
William sends another note. He says, I was born in 1972. I predicted on July 2nd we would go 19-0. We will score 72 on the Jets December 16th.
Wow.
We will break the Dolphins mark, and all the talk of the greatest will belong to the New England franchise. It is destiny. And then he says, P.S., please lower the grocery tax. This is the guy that wanted to nominate one of us for governor of Mississippi.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It is?
Please lower the grocery tax.
Well, A, I'm sorry about the grocery tax, whatever that is.
When elected, William, I pledge to you, I will do everything within my power to speak to the legislature and make lowering the grocery tax in the great state of Mississippi a priority in my administration.
Thank
you very much.
Fantastic.
Boss, you're a loser.
Thank you.
I'm glad now we have that straightened out. that you are on the record.
Priority.
You're on the
How
record.
How dare they? How dare they tax groceries in Mississippi?
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either.
I don't know. And you know what? It sounds horrible, though. It sounds
Can you imagine?
Horrible. Yeah. It sounds terrible.
Here,
it
have a hot terrible. Dog. Oh, and by the way, I need a nickel tax on that hot
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, that's just brutal. But getting back to you, there were a lot of numbers in that email. A lot of numbers.
It says we're going to score 72 on the Jets.
72 on the Jets. Mark it down.
How great would that
72.
Be,
72. This is unbelievable.
There's not a fan within earshot right now that would hate that.
No, they'd all love
it. Not a person would hate that.
They'd all love it, but 72. Wow, and he even gave the day he predicted 19-0.
That's right.
And we got to believe him, right?
That's right.
Because he gave a day.
Yeah, I believe
And that's legit.
Well, I have no reason to not believe anybody who writes this program. I have no reason to
No reason at all. No reason. You're right. Absolutely right. You know what? There might not even be a grocery tax. They might all just be made up.
I don't care. I'm repealing the grocery tax.
If it's there, right. It's gone. If you elect John Rook, it's gone.
That's exactly right. All right. Jack sends this note, and he says, guys, love the show. My serving of humble pie comes from the run defense. For most of the year, I have been saying, even though the Pats are winning, their run defense has been suspect. Now, as this is a copycat league, you will see a lot more teams attempting to pile a large dose of power running against the Patriots. Keep up the good work, and oh, yeah, I think Jarvis Green is or can be a monster. There you go. It comes from Jack.
But, okay, now I know we said injuries cannot be used as excuses. Richard Seymour was missing for all of those games leading up to the Washington game, and now he's getting back up the game speed. I think you might see a little bit of difference. Like we said in the red zone, you'll also
red zone,
see a little
you're
bit
starting
of difference
to see a little bit, yeah.
As
Plus,
well.
You also have to realize, I think, the reason that the power running game may have had a bit of an effect is because the Patriots opened up in a nickel defense, all right? They started with four down linemen. They only went with two linebackers, and they played a fifth defensive back. And, of course, they had a guy like Rodney Harrison shadowing Dallas Clark the whole game. So the middle of the field was a little bit more susceptible, which is one of the reasons why they went with four down linemen. And if you get by that front four, and I think you have to give some credit to the Colts offensive line, naturally your back is going to go a couple extra yards. There are just less bodies in the box.
I mean, that's just simple mathematics.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's all it boils down to. Sometimes some teams just give up yards on the ground. They say, okay, we're going to let you run the ball. That's fine. And we're going to take away your most efficient weapon. And obviously in Indianapolis, as much as I have talked about how much I love Joseph Addai, it is Peyton Manning. And if you focus on him, then you basically take away the team's best weapon. And that's what the Patriots are trying to do. So, yeah, the run defense is also, if I had to rank my humble pie, it's probably on there somewhere. But, again, I want to see how this defense responds with Richard Seymour in there full time after some games under his belt.
All right, well, seeing as we're nearing the end of the program, is there anything that, you wanted to touch on that you didn't get a chance to, make? I mean, you gave good humble pie today.
I did the best I could.
You gave us the running game.
Not very good at cooking, but I tried.
Which is pretty good. That's good.
Yeah,
but any other nitpicky items or anything else that were on your agenda that you just had to get off your chest here today?
Well, in all honesty, the penalties were a concern. I mean, I was concerned about those because, granted, two or three of those penalties were complete garbage.
Well, I think you have to realize that half of those penalty yards really should not have occurred.
No. I'm talking about the number of penalties.
Well, there were ten penalties.
Ten penalties.
Take away those two, then you had 8 for 70, 73 or whatever it was.
That's still a pretty sizable amount of penalties, and that is unpatriot-like football to shoot yourself in the foot, and that's uncharacteristic of this team.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that also one concern to be looked at here. And, sometimes, now I know it's practically blasphemy to say anything bad about Tom Brady. I understand that. But I need to say this. If you're going to heave it up for a jump ball, do it to Moss, not Stallworth. Okay, when you throw the ball like he did when that ball was picked up, I believe in the second quarter, and you throw the ball like that, make sure it's Moss under there. If you're just going to throw it up for a jump ball, just make sure it's Randy. That's all I'm saying. Other than that, you would have to be crazy to say that there is that there is even marginally stuff wrong with this team. There really isn't. When you look top to bottom, this is just a complete team. And also, and this is one thing, too. Now, this is me. This is about as nitpicky as it gets. This is really bad. But they've been really healthy. The Patriots
Quick,
have been
knock
pretty
on
healthy.
Wood.
I'm doing it right now. You can hear it. I'm sorry, but they've been pretty darn healthy. And, You know, you never know what can happen with this season. You never know what can happen. There's still seven games to go.
It's clear here that, you know, if something were to derail what has gone on thus far, injuries are liable to be a part of it.
Right, and it's probably not in the best interest.
Not an excuse, but it is a fact.
And it's not in the best interest of you or I or this program to talk about forecasting injuries. That's just dumb, but... It is Humble Pie Tuesday, and I'm just saying.
Injuries do happen.
They do happen. You still have seven games to go, and even though the injury report is a mile long week after week after week, the Patriots still have been pretty darn lucky when it comes to injuries so far, and that is one thing that needs to continue if they're going to even get anywhere close to 16-0. They need to be injury-free. Injury-free, because all it takes is one injury on either side of the ball that provides a soft spot for a team that has a powerful weapon, like, for example, coming up in Week 11 when they play the Buffalo Bills, they have a guy on offense called Lee Evans that is an absolute game-breaker, okay? And if somehow, last week against the Colts, somebody goes down with an injury, that creates a big soft spot in that defense with Lee Evans, if you have an injury to the secondary. So that's one thing I'm concerned about. But in all honesty, really, the only game that's left that scares me at all now is Pittsburgh. That's the only game that scares me left that's on the schedule, and they have them at home, so I'm not that nervous.
By the way, Nick sends a quick note. He just says, sorry, blocking is still a problem on this team.
Blocking?
He says blocking is still a problem.
Blocking, like that's what run blocking.
Blocking. I assume that means run
blocking. Well, I mean, I guess he's tying into what I'm saying.
I don't think he's thinking about pass blocking. I think he's probably concerned with run blocking. Right,
yeah, that's
that kind of goes in line with the running game, though, does it not?
It does. Yeah. And I think I find that interesting that he would just say
blocking.
Blocking. Yeah. That's succinct.
Well, you know, you began the program saying that you thought Jarvis Green was your unsung hero, right?
He was the MVP of the game. He was the MVP of the game.
Apparently, the National Football League agrees with you because Josh sends us an email here. He says Jarvis Green has just been nominated for GMC Defensive Player of the Week.
Well, there you go.
Patriots defensive lineman Jarvis Green has been nominated for the GMC Defensive Player of the Week. He collected five tackles, four of them solo, one sack, and a forced fumble in the win over the Colts. Green's fourth quarter sack and forced fumble led to the final possession in which they were able to run out the clock. Fans are encouraged to cast their vote on NFL.com.
Well, go out and do it. Jarvis Green deserves to win that award because he made the big plays when he needed to, stopping a die in the backfield. Because Adai was having his way with the Patriots,
sure.
and really Jarvis Green stepped up, made the plays when
Absolutely.
He needed to, and he did. He really is a in this team with the 3-4 a bench player, but yet he still comes up big when called upon. And in my opinion, he was the MVP of the game.
Final email here comes from Jay Smoove, who says, I like to watch the game by myself simply because I watched the game at a sports bar after church, and a couple of drunk Colts fans got a little cocky, and I, a Pats fan, had to put them in their place.
Oh, wow.
I'm glad they won because I didn't have to say any more. Next!
Wow.
And then he says, who will be in the AFC Championship game with the Pats? I personally think it'll be the Colts again. So you might have to put somebody in their place again, all right? So just be ready for that. I hope you're ready for that.
I mean, well, it's hard to argue with that. Hard to argue against Indianapolis going to the AFC Championship game, but you can make a case for Pittsburgh. You can make a case for the Chargers, even though they got crushed in Minnesota. They're a team that you have to also look at. So there are a couple teams that are kind of sneaking up here. But, yeah, I mean, in all likelihood, unless Indianapolis finds a way to lose one more game down the stretch, they're going to be the number two seed. They're going to have home field advantage unless they play the Patriots. And you're right. It's probably where we're going to go. And also, I'm actually kind of disappointed that we didn't get more information on that email about how he shut the Colts fans up. Was there any fisticuffs at this bar? What happened
here? He says, I, as a Pats fan, had to put them in their place.
Put them in their place?
All
how did you do that?
I don't know.
I mean, it
sounds
like
inquiring minds need to know.
It sounds like it was you versus three or four Colts fans. How
That's
did
what
you
I
put
hear.
Them in their place?
I want to hear about the Titanic struggle.
Exactly.
Great email participation on the show today. We
awesome.
Appreciate that. Very, very good stuff. Same patch time, same patch channel. Manana, we'll get into, obviously everybody knows this being the off week, the players were in for meetings here earlier today. They have been, I believe, as of now, summarily dismissed by Coach Belichick for the remainder of the week.
And we will hear from some of those players tomorrow as they, you know, make their way out on their week off and their bye week. So we'll have those interviews for you on tomorrow's program. We'll hear from Coach Belichick as well, most likely tomorrow on the program. And Brian Lowe will also be joining us tomorrow since, you know, he stiffed us today. But that's okay. We like Brian anyway. You can see him on Patriots Today. Tom, well done today.
Thank you. I had a great time. This is awesome.
Tom Anino, again, is our graduate student in our sports radio class at Emerson College and getting a chance to
Generations of New Englanders.
Yeah.
That's me.
There he is.
There I am.
That's you, the mayor.
That's me. How'd you get that?
The mayor here with us inside the playbook.